It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this 10th day of September 2020. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. It's also where we keep tucked away the Horn chat room, the merry, wacky, zany multimedia extravaganza that augments your listening pleasure during the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between, the great globe around. Yes, Squeaky, you're right. It's Ferg's Uber driver. In fact, I've just gotten back from doing exactly that. And found out today, I thought we were going to go back to the day shift on the weekend, but I was misshapen. No, we're on the 4 to 12 all the way to Sunday. So I can pretty much cancel any idea of having a weekend, but then again, I haven't had one of those for weeks now. Not that I'm complaining, except that I'm complaining. Hi, I'm Bob, Uber driver Bob, and it is Thorn in the Side Thursday here on the Horn, and I've got a Jim Dandy nominee right out of the gate. But anyway, if you run over to HeadOn.live and click on chat room, you know the standard announcement applies. If you haven't already picked out a screen name and a password, pick one out. If you do, well, just use the old one, and you'll be immediately greeted by Anatole and Squeaky, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, and as well as his trusty companion. Namely, midweek pinch hit utility moderator and all around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. So we're the gang is all here and moving. Well, more arriving, I presume, the whole time. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. This program is no different. So thanks go out to our 10th day of the month subscribers. That would be Daniel and Judy. And Paul from Parts Unknown, thank you most kindly. And so the fundraising goal for this evening stands at $300, and that'll bring us even with the week and leave us with just a regular daily amount for tomorrow evening. The whole week winds out at $500, so there we are. If you'd like to help out, well, the interface is right there on the main page at HeadOn.live. And remember, Tony and Chico has an ongoing for the month challenge for new subscribers, or an offer, really. It's not a challenge; it's an offer. Tony and Chico, one of our longest-standing subscribers, will double the first month's subscription for anybody who would care to jump in and become a subscriber. You put in 10. Tony puts in 10. You put in 20. Tony puts in 20. You put in 30, he puts in 30, all the way up to $100. So 10 new subscribers at $10, one at 100, two at 50, four at 25, et cetera, five at 20. Tony will double your first month up to and including anything between $10 and $100. And it's real easy to do. It's just a matter of checking the box there at headon.live. So I'm, and we always need new subscribers. We still have not gotten to that happy 100 number yet. We're not there. But we're trying. So let's check in with a little bit of early communications. By the way, I had a lovely lunch today. I was just feeling simple, so I ran out to the Blackstone Griddle. And just did up some, well, I was making lunch for Ferg. I'm not only his Uber driver, I'm his cook. So I made him some bacon, tomato, and cheese sandwiches on sourdough, and scrambled a couple of eggs, and added a little cream cheese to that. You know, sometimes simple is just delicious, and what made it super, super delicious was that I pitted out a nice little handful of Henry's fermented garlic and oregano olives, courtesy of Dave number 11. Pitted those out, chopped them up, added a little bit of finely chopped onion, sautéed it all on the griddle, poured the egg onto it, scrambled it, put the cream cheese to it, had a little bacon, some fresh tomato. Woohoo! Yeah, it was fantastic. I'm doing a number on this first jar of Henry's fermented garlic Sevillano olives. These are bigger than the olives in the previous jars. They're huge. And man, are they good. So again, thank you to Dave number 11. Speaking of the olives, Dave says, you know, I've been saving brine from Henry's fermented garlic in the fridge, and it developed a white surface layer. I shook it, and it clouded the brine. Today it's clear again. I sipped it, and it's delicious. I know nothing about what's going on. Is this that like that movie Bottle Shock where the guy's Chardonnay clouds and then clears? Whoops, spoiler. Worth a watch on Amazon Prime. Anyhow, I wondered if there was any such phenomenon with your jars as they spent a week at room temperature. So far, so good. No clouding. And yes, I too have been sipping at the brine. I think it's good for you. As long as, you know, you're not just mainlining it. I haven't seen any of that. I'll let you know if I do, Dave. And a note coming in from Joey. Darlene called last night, and she's a member of her local Connecticut library board, if I heard her correctly. Good for you, Darlene, and hold on to your convictions, because there's no way children should be returning to school under these circumstances. Literally, the part that stopped me dead in my tracks was when Bob stated that with the children returning to school, a certain percentage will likely die or take the virus home with them and kill a family member. Then, once again, I was left with the paradigm of the Republicans. As long as it's not my kid, who cares? Yes, Republicans don't give a damn about anything until it directly affects them. That's the Republican way. There was talk at the Republican convention about replacing Pence as vice president with a woman in order to appeal to suburban women. First, there was talk of Nimrata Haley, and yes, Nimrata is actually her real birth name. Oh, yes, it is. Nimrata Rand something or other. Yes, the talk of Haley just comes and goes, just like Halley's Comet, every, not 40, I think, more like 70 years, Joey, coming within sight of the earth and then disappearing. Yes, Haley is a rising star in the Republican Party, but just like Nikki Haley, Halley's Comet is never likely coming down to earth, and let's hope it doesn't, because a comet crash of that magnitude would make the New Madrid Fault look like a crack in the sidewalk. Then there's the gnome. And it's almost like Joey was anticipating my lead story for this here Thorn in the Side Thursday. Then there's the gnome from South Dakota, not to be confused with a G-N-O-M-E. This is an N-O-E-M, that mystical figure that lives in the ground. But this is Christy Gnome, who just lives with her head in the ground, as she recently stated that the infection rates are just made up. However, Christy Gnome, the governor of South Dakota, well aware that the potential peril that a Sturgis rally might wreak upon her state and the nation, decided not to cancel the rally because the old Republican standard, who cares about life when you can make a pile of money? Now, Noam should definitely be chosen to replace Pence because now she presides over the number one state in the country per capita cases of the coronavirus. Yes, thanks to Trump, the United States leads the world as we're the number one country per capita with the virus. Trump and Noam have a lot in common and would make a perfect tandem. What's that, Giraffe? Giraffe says 20% of all the corona cases in August can be traced back to Sturgis, and in the words of the great Tara Devlin, holy Christ on a bike! This has been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, the 10th day of September, with Giraffe keeping his head way above ground. Yes, indeed. And like I said, Joey anticipated my lead story. Very much so. Because it's, well, it's Kristi Noem. Who is, of course, a thorn in the side intellect. And what about Kristi Noem? Well, yes, we talked about this in the previous program. The study out from the German Institute for Labor and Economics, or Labor Economics, and using cell phone data, which is pretty reliable, this German outfit said, as Joey alluded to, that the Sturgis rally can be cited as the origin of some 250,000, that would be a quarter of a million, coronavirus cases. But no, Kristi Noem, genius, says that that's just made up. Right. Because Kristi Noem is the Michelle Bachmann of Sarah Palin's. Holy crap. What was her complaint? Well, her complaint was the fact that she got stone cold busted for her malicious and malignant narcissistic lack of concern for the well-being of anybody not named Kristi Noem. The Institute of Labor Economics in Germany, their initials are the IZA. I don't know what that would be. The Institut Zeit something Arbeiten. I got the A as in labor, Arbeit, work. After 400,000 Otne Ute Eitbre mask-hole COVIDiots rumbled into Sturgis, South Dakota, and got all butthole to belly button and larped and smollicked and lollygagged and wallered around and sprayed and spewed and hollered Trump at each other for 10 solid days. Well, they went home then, just like we talked about when it was going on. They went home, and they took their new friend, the Dondemic, with them. How did the Institute of Labor Economics reach this number? They extrapolated a possible infection count based on increased infection rates following the event, having tracked cell phone data from Sturgis during the rally. You can see all these morons, these maggots, these Trumpanzees, these good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Republicans. You know, they don't want to wear no mask because, you know, if you wear a mask, well, that just means that Bill Gates is going to be able to put a secret chip in you so that he can then turn it on and make a robot zombie from you, and you'll just walk up like sheeple and get yourself another chip and a dip and probably even some vaccinations. Utterly oblivious the entire time that they are carrying a tracking device with them. everywhere they go. The authors of the study pointed out, we conclude that the Sturgis motorcycle rally generated public health costs of approximately $12.2 billion. As to new coronavirus cases, they came up with 266,796 cases because these spoiled mask-hole COVIDiots couldn't just stay home.
They had to get out on the open road and they're iron hogs. That's what they had to do because that's what you do when you're patriotic merkin with a hardly rideable motorcycle.
One of the more ironic things that the IZA pointed out.
This is enough to have paid each of the estimated 462,182 rally attendees $26,553.64 not to attend. And you don't spread the Rona.
Well, Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, is always available to help the Christy Gnomes of the world when it comes time to push back against some reason and common sense. So, yesterday afternoon, there she was on being interviewed on the Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And of the IZA study, she said,
well, that's actually not factual whatsoever. What they did is,
I know, wrong accent.
What they did is they took a snapshot in time and they did a lot of speculation, did some back of the napkin math, and made up some numbers. You know, numbers like bleem and gobloop and other numbers like arglac. And you know, arglac is the new number that comes between 3 and 4. Bleem is the number that comes after 9 but before 10.
Mm-hmm.
They just did some back-of-the-napkin math and made up some numbers and published them. This study wasn't even done by a healthcare study. It was done by the Institute of Labor Economics, and it's completely untrue. I mean, the real number of cases from the rally is just less than 300. Shh. Don't tell Christy Gnome. But, in the 2 weeks after this super spreader, LARPing and smollicking and lollygagging and grabulating event closed, the state of South Dakota had a 126% increase in cases of the Dondemic. And you know what? It didn't matter how many times South Dakota Governor Christy Gnome hollered, it's not true, it's just back of the napkin math, that's what it is. Wait a minute. Maybe I'm simple. How does back of the napkin? How are we figuring that out now? Is the back of the napkin the part of the napkin furthest from you on the table? As opposed to the front of the napkin being the nearest part of the napkin to you on the table? And is it a cocktail napkin? Or is it the napkin you set in your lap or you use like a bib if you're good, if you're a well-raised hillbilly like me? Or is it the reverse of the napkin? I'm a little lost in the terminology here, because obviously she has far greater analytical skills, emphasis on the anal part of analytical, than do the real live, honest to God, no kidding, fucking scientists of the Institute for Labor and Economics in Germany. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's not just the researchers at the IZA. Other people who weren't even involved in the study have explained that Sturgis is a big reason for the fact that there's a
and this is a complicated medical term, shit ton of new infections throughout the heartland. Middle America, the Midwest. Of course, they some of those self-same researchers who weren't involved with the IZA study also said, well, you know, Sturgis and motorcycle riders, them hooligans, riding around with their Marlon Brando leather caps on. Yeah. But also, the Midwest is experiencing a spike, they say, because so many young scholars returned to college campuses in places like Iowa and South Dakota and North Dakota. Right. You know. Of course, interestingly, I think that one may draw a pretty bright line between those two separate social dynamics. Because there aren't just a whole shit ton, another complicated statistical term in this case, there aren't just a whole shit ton of college students who can afford a hardly rideable to take to college with them, let alone drive it to a super spreader event in Sturgis, South Dakota. We've crossed 900,000 deaths globally in this pandemic. That means we're on the way now to 1 million dead around the globe. And the United States, all by our lonesome selves, we've got almost 25% of the total cases on Earth. And we're about 20% of the deaths, even though we are 4% of the total population of this little blue-green marble time machine hurtling in its helical path through the universe. But Christy Nome ain't having none of it. Because she knows that South Dakota is number one. And as Flavio points out, yes, number one with a 20.9% positivity rate, the highest in the country. We're number one. We're number one. We're number one. Right. Suman, having fun with mathematics. 2 + 2 = I just calculated 2 + 2 in my notebook calculator and on the back of a napkin. Surprisingly, all of the results turned out to be 4. What a damned idiot Christy Nome is. Well, let's not be too hard on Christy Nome. Because it took a majority of the voting population in South Dakota to make her governor. Which means that a majority of the voting population in South Dakota are also idiots. Damned idiots. Some of them now have family who are perhaps dying. And see, that's the problem with Christy Nome saying, well, we've only got 300 cases. So whatever deaths come out of those 300 cases, 3, if it's 1%, 15, if it's 5%. Well, they're okay with Christy Nome because she's a Christian. And she's washed in the blood. And those deaths don't matter to her. Because even if it turned out that she was deadly wrong and has personally helped to spread over a quarter of a million cases. Remember, all she has to do is say, "Sorry, Jesus." And Jesus says, "We're cool. Hey, it's all right. I forgive you." What a toxic horror of a human being she is. And it must just feel awful to be a normal person who lives in South Dakota and has to deal with that many monumentally stupid people. Oh, wait, correction coming in from Flavio, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Department of Corrections. Not that kind. According to Fortune magazine, South Dakota has a 23.3% positivity rate. Still number one, says Flavio. And that, of course, is what matters. Oh, and thank you very kindly to Jeremy in Vermont getting us started this evening. We're down below $300. Thank you, Jeremy. Hopefully you'll have some company and we'll get... Gosh, it'd be nice to just have a regular fundraising evening for Friday on the Front Porch. Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you. Note coming in from Scott. Let's get metaphysical. Dear sweet merciful Jesus, please raise from the dead the late U.S. Senator from South Dakota and 1972 Democratic presidential nominee George McGovern, just long enough for him to slap that woman Christy Noem upside her empty head. Oddly enough, I was thinking about George McGovern, World War II hero, sucker, loser, at least according to Donald Trump. George McGovern, in addition to serving honorably in the United States military, served honorably in the Senate of the United States. And became the 1972 Democratic nominee for president. And got trounced in a huge landslide by that walking criminal enterprise, Richard Milhouse Pinhead Nixon. Truman gave him the Pinhead moniker. But once upon a time... And this is a measure, or at least an example of the degree to which this country has changed in the scant course of a couple of generations. South Dakotans used to be sane. They used to send people like George McGovern to the Senate. Now they make empty-headed grossly negligent, willful, wanton, and reckless fools like Christy Noem, their governor. Whatever could have happened in the intervening years? How did that transformation take place? How did a population of mostly white farmers and small business folks, alongside some indigenous populations, how did they go from being rational to absolutely batshit crazy? Well, I don't think the indigenous populations did. But those salt-of-the-earth farmers and those business people, yeah, they lost their shit. And that's how you get Christy Noem. And it's also how you get South Dakota Secretary of Health Kim Malsom Risden. Kim Malsom Risden Sounds like some sort of obnoxious breakfast cereal that you have to cook.
Yep, little Donnie. Little Christy. Come to breakfast now. I've got a hot pot of Malsom Risden for you. And a little bit of buttermilk to put on it. Kim Malsom Risden, Malsom Risden, said, well, this study hasn't even been peer-reviewed.
What really drives them crazy, among other things, how can you tell? Well, special powers. Well, the same organization, the same study authors, examined similar data in regard to the Black Lives Matter protests, and they found specifically that those protests didn't lead to an increase in coronavirus cases. Guess why? They wore masks. And I suppose they also, it might have something to do with it, didn't sit elbow to elbow and belly button to butthole in bars and saloons getting liquored up and losing all their inhibitions and saying, hang on a minute, I got to pull this mask down. I just want to kiss you. You remember the photo of the naked lady in Sturgis? Yeah. That didn't happen with the Black Lives Matter protesters. Even the one young woman who completely disrobed and took a pose in protest in, I think, Seattle, she did so with a great deal of social distance between her and everyone else. Oh. So the fact of the matter is, Christy Noem is, no surprise on this Thorn in the Side Thursday, a bioterrorist. Plain and simple. That's all. That's all. And, Greg, citing Lawrence Ferlinghetti, who wrote this during the reign of error of Bush Cheney, seems equally relevant now. Pity the nation whose people are sheep and whose shepherds mislead them. Pity the nation whose leaders are liars, whose sages are silenced, whose bigots haunt the airwaves. Pity the nation that raises not its voice except to praise conquerors and acclaim the bully as hero and aims to rule the world with force and by torture. Pity the nation knows no other language but its own and no other culture but its own. Pity the nation whose breath is money and sleeps the sleep of the too well-fed. Pity the nation, oh, pity the people, who allow their rights to erode and their freedoms to be washed away. My country, tears of thee, sweet land of liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. Woof. Thanks, Greg. Note from Ron and Raleigh, subject line, Mrs. Peel, you're needed. One of my teenage crushes has passed. The high-kicking, catsuit-wearing companion to the dapper John Steed, Emma Peel, a.k.a. Diana Rigg, passed this morning from cancer at the age of 82. John Steed's first partner, Honor Blackman, passed in April at the age of 94. Both were also Bond girls. Man, I'm getting old. Well, Ron, she may have been one of your teenage crushes. I look back and I think maybe at the age of 5 or so, Diana Rigg as Emma Peel was one of the first women I, as a tiny boy, ever saw and recognized that Wow. She's pretty. Because, you know, at five, you don't get much more complex than that. But just, I was just stunned. And yeah, she passed away today. And she did a hell of a turn on Game of Thrones, too. Noting that she just did her job and never actually really watched the program. You know, that's the way it is when you're a master of your craft. Oh, what? You need a saucy Elder Royal, do you? Oh, I can do that. Cut! Okay, good. Well, ta-ta. Not sure, says James in Illinois. But it seems to me that it's related to oil. Didn't the same thing happen to Texas? If you look at the map, aren't the Dakotas like a top hat on top of that whole section of the country? Dakotas, Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, and the aforementioned? There's little difference in any of them. What's the matter with Kansas? What's the matter with any of them? All of them. Well, oil plays a part of it, but I think it's also part of the larger cultural shift. Ron in Raleigh sent me a comic strip earlier today. The comic strip Canderville. Ron said, once again, you're ahead of the curve. Today's Canderville strip echoes what you've been saying for I don't remember how long. It must be tough being right all the time. Well, not all the time, but we are out in front of the curve. There's no doubt about it. If you've never read Canderville, it's a great strip by Darren Bell. Two folks talking, guy talking to a woman. Guy says, we're in the 26th year of a cold civil war, Susan. Where have you heard that phrase before? I dare say that cold civil war was probably uttered on this program before it was ever uttered anywhere else, even by the smartest man on the radio. Just ask him, he'll tell you. We're in the 26th year of a cold civil war, Susan. In 1994, Newt Gingrich broke American politics. He replaced facts with conspiracy theories. He replaced opposition with obstruction. He replaced normal rivalry with the delegitimization of his opponents. I would say demonization. It's all been downhill since then. Then the punchline, of course. Next to Steve Urkel, Newt Gingrich was the single most poisonous and destructive thing the 90s did to America. Well, you can take Steve Urkel's tagline and apply it to Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist.
Did I do that?
Yeah. Yeah, Newt Gingrich did that. In conjunction with everything else he did, you know, his contract on America, his braying and grunting and hooting about Bill Clinton's marital infidelities, every last one of which was uttered at the same time that he was carrying on an adulterous, fornicatory affair with an intern that he later married, who is now, oh my God, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's true, the United States ambassador to the See of St. Peter at Rome. Jesus Christ, every time poor Pope Frank touches that horrible woman, he probably has to have an entire team of exorcists in and boils his hands in holy water. For me, it's kind of a clue that it's all a bunch of bunk because she doesn't burst into flames every time she comes into the presence. Under the circumstances, I probably should not have used the verb comes. But yeah, cold civil war and Newt Gingrich. But that's not all there is about Kristi Noem. Oh, hell no. not by a long shot. This past Tuesday, she announced, get the hockey puck. Now, again, we've had another correction from Flavio in serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Department of Corrections. Not that kind. Yeah, Flavio said, sorry again, according to Fortune, Alabama's now number one at 24.5%. South Dakota's number two. Still, shit. We're number two. Yes, you are, Christy Gnome. You're number two. So there they are, burning up with the Rona. They have never done any kind of, made even the faintest attempt to mitigate the spread of the disease, because, of course, their god emperor would not approve. Yeah. And they're desperately trying to bring people into the state here as summer wanes. So they got them an ad campaign. Unpaid product placement.
South Dakota, the land of the free.
Oh, wait a minute.
With our breathtaking... with South Dakota, the land of the free. With our breathtaking landscapes and wide open spaces... we're a place to safely explore. And with our low taxes,
safely.
We're a place to grow. We're open for opportunity and always will be. I'm Governor Christy Gnome. Celebrate what makes America great and experience the great faces and great places of South Dakota.
Oh, ain't that just charming? And she couldn't get a professional voiceover person, so she done it herself. Maybe she's getting paid for it. Well, by the way, the video that goes with the audio you just heard includes a little bit of footage, a flyby, probably a drone, of the face of the Crazy Horse Monument, which probably has the indigenous people of South Dakota about ready to have a fit. Because you got to remember, Christy Gnome was ready to go to war with the indigenous people of South Dakota in an effort to try to kill a whole shit ton of them with the Rona when they put up roadblocks saying, nope, sorry, you're not coming onto Indian reservation land if you don't have any business being here. So she wants people to come to South Dakota and visit and even live there. And it's supposed to be a tourism video, but any time a politico does something like this, well, it's a de facto political ad. Now, here's the best part of it all. That ad, which incidentally ran during... alongside her speech at the Republican, well, at the Cool Kids Conclave last month, ran on Fox News, about butted up against her speech there at the Cool Kids Clavern. They paid Fox for that. They paid Fox $5 million. Because it's a $5 million tourism ad campaign trying to get people to come to South Dakota and get sick, maybe die. At the very least, maybe take some souvenir coronavirus home with them to wherever it is they call home. Well, it's South Dakota's money. I reckon they can spend it how they want to, right? I mean, any self-respecting libertarian or Republican would say that. But, of course, it's always a Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. You paid for that. You paid for that. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, paid for that. Because Kristi Noem used coronavirus relief funds to pay for that miserable piece of shitty propaganda. Yeah. Kristi Noem has a spokescreep by the name of, ironically, Ian Fury, who said,
South Dakota should absolutely be promoting tourism.
I said it that way because the spokescreep's name is Ian Fury.
That's how people put food on the table.
And so why was that stupid line about a place to safely explore in the ad copy? Well, that's because by putting that line in there, they satisfied a requirement by the Department of the Treasury that the relief money has to be used to address the pandemic. Not content with having run that stupid fucking ad on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, well, they're also you thinking about running the ad on the History Channel, on TBS, on the USA Network, on the Hallmark Channel, on A&E, and Discovery. You know the Discovery Channel. You and me ain't nothing but mammals. Let's do it like they do on the Discovery Channel. That Discovery Channel. Because the maggot Treasury Department, run by Steve Mnuchin, that's what you call a drain a clog in the swamp drain in Washington. And we got some Mnuchin stopping up the swamp drain. Well, they say the maggot Treasury Department says, yeah, y'all can use that money to publicize your tourism when it's safe for y'all to do tourism some more and make sure people who come to your states is safe. Surprisingly, there is a Democrat, or more, maybe a few, in South Dakota. Senator Reynolds Nezeba is one of those, and he sits on the Senate Appropriations Committee in the South Dakota legislature, and he said exactly what I just told you. That's about her trying to become more nationally known, raising her profile. Because while they're willing to spend those that coronavirus relief money on stupid goddamned ads, they've been downright tight-fisted with it when it comes to nonprofits, when it comes to the universities in the state, and when it comes to that fetish object, the ordinarily fetish object for Republicans, business. Senator Nezeba said, the way to get our economy going again is to address the pandemic. Grifters, foot pads, cut purses, highwaymen, and lick spittles. Man. Lee in New York says, there are only four faces in South Dakota that do not need to wear a mask. Unfortunately, most people at Sturgis did not wear masks, and they're sharing with their loved ones. And that's five, Lee. Five. Washington, Jefferson, Lincoln, Theodore Roosevelt, and Crazy Horse. Yep, five. Jeremy in Vermont says, South Dakota is a great place for growth. Mainly growth of the coronavirus at the moment. Steve in New York, referring to the copy, the voiceover for the stupid South Dakota ad. Truly breathtaking. Yeah, says Steve, better order those ventilators to help with that. Because you know what else is breathtaking? COVID-19 is breathtaking. You know, I wonder if somebody that Christy Noem actually cares about, who, and frankly, I don't know if that person exists. I don't know if there's anybody Christy Noem cares about that isn't named Christy Noem. She is, after all, a maggot. But I wonder if someone that she cares about, assuming that person exists, wound up face down, horizontally crucified, with a slash cut in their throat to get a garden hose down their trachea and into their lungs, placed into a chemically induced coma, unable to move or speak or see, but able to feel and hear everything, having the machine doing their breathing for them for weeks and weeks before they either recover or die. I wonder if maybe that would make Christy Noem finally give a fuck about this virus. Because heretofore, it's pretty clear that she doesn't. Jesus. Sorry, Miss Christie, says Scott in San Diego. As long as you're in charge, the closest I plan to get to South Dakota is watching North by Northwest. You could go back and rewatch Deadwood. That's South Dakota, too. Agnes, by the way, is still pissed off at the way that they fucked up that otherwise wonderful series. Agnes holds a grudge. Billable Rick. Christy Noem, G-N-O-M-E. You can't really blame Christy Noem for her lack of critical thinking skills and confusing the term back-of-the-envelope calculation with a back-of-the-napkin calculation. After all, Christy's named after an imaginary forest creature and is prone to magical thinking. Gnomes are also well known for conjuring new, previously unknown numbers, like Bleem and Gorblack and Noopdor. Mm-hmm. Oh, and by the way, Billable Rick had a challenge yesterday that I did not get to because we were in the, I was in the midst of the conversation with Darlene. And referring to the fires in California and Oregon and Washington, this country has never seen anything like what's going on right now. Billable Rick says, nature's also batting last here in Orange County. Although it's a comfortable, cloudy 87 degrees, the sky is pale orangish and ash is falling due to the El Dorado fire burning about 45 to 50 miles east near Eucapa. You know, that was the fire caused by the gender reveal party morons. Oh, stupid. I'm pleased to inform you that it was an uncircumcised boy. Smiley face. Meanwhile, 50 miles north and 20 miles east of my home in L.A. County, the Bobcat Fire. is raging in the Angeles National Forest near Monrovia. I could see smoke on a distant ridge of that fire from the 13th hole of the golf course that I played yesterday morning. By the way, I shot a career best 63. Yay, Billable Rick! Only three over par, with four birdies and two missed three-foot putts on a par 60 course. So I'd like to make a don't choke on a three-foot putts challenge. I'll pledge $20 and I'll double it for a total of 40 once the challenge is met. So we're at 295, and if that challenge is met, then that takes us down to 235. Thank you, Billable Rick. And there's nothing worse than getting a case of the yips on a three-foot putt. You got to read those, too. Reading. It's fundamental. So thanks for the challenge, Billable Rick. Let's see if anybody bites. South Dakota, says Ron in Raleigh. If South Dakota is such a gall-darned great place to live, how come then the whole state only has a population of 884,659? More people live in my county in North Carolina than live in South Dakota. Well, that's the dirty little secret they don't tell you about, is the South Dakota winters. If it was a great place to be in the winter, we wouldn't have driven the indigenous population onto it. That's a bit simplistic, but still. Hell, South Dakota's got less people than West Virginia. And, by the way, just a quick update on make West Virginia great big old governor, Jim Justice. He declared yesterday,
we have tested about 426 West Virginians, and that's almost 25% of our population.
Well, if we round up and assume that that is 25% of the population, say round up to 500,000, then the population of West Virginia is 1 million, which is still more than South Dakota. There's only one problem with that. Now, this guy's the only billionaire in the state of West Virginia. And he is a surefire business genius. Just ask him, he'll tell you. But apparently he's no better at ciphering than I am. Because the actual population of West Virginia is a little bit more than 1.7 million people. That's 1,700,000 people. That's a 1 and a comma and a 7 and some and 2 aughts and a comma and 3 more aughts. And a dot and 2 more aughts if you want to get particular about it. And, well, nobody seemed to be willing to correct make West Virginia great big old governor Jim Justice on the fact that 4 times 500,000 is not 1.7 million. But this is the guy we have to trust to try to keep us from getting killed by the Rona. Right. 500,000 is 25% of 2 million. I can't cipher worth a fuck. But still, no. It's almost 25% of the state, says make West Virginia great big old governor Jim Justice. Here's a news flash. Testing 25% of the state once, with most of those tests taking as much as 7 days or more to get back, is about as useless as your teats on a boar hog. trying to remember if he said 426,000. Yeah, he did. He said 426,000. Thanks for running the numbers for me there, Steve. We need to be, well, we need to be able to test everybody. But that's a bridge too damn far, I guess. Wait a minute. I've gotten sideways of Lee in New York. Bob, do not say aught. You are not Jethro Bodine. No, I ain't graduated sixth grade, and I ain't got no nickel squirter neither. And I ain't decided on whether or not to be a brain surgeon or a fry cook. With a golf pro tip for Billable Rick, Dave number 11 writes in and says, "Focused indifference, Billable. If you don't care, you can't yip." Bill in Allentown. If you want to go to South Dakota, you can also watch the movie Fargo. Steve Buscemi is damn funny in it. Well, yes, he is. Erwin, who knows a little bit about the northern Great Plains, once socialistic, he observes, "Maggot in the northern Great Plains. North Dakota and South Dakota once were occupied by farming immigrants with a socialism bent." It's absolutely true. And there was a lot of immigration after the 1848 revolutions in Europe. And there was an outbreak of absolute democracy and socialistic thought in places from Indiana to Illinois to Iowa to Minnesota to Wisconsin, the Dakotas. "North Dakota and South Dakota once were occupied by farming immigrants with a socialism bent. North Dakota's state bank was a result of this heritage. Both states are now overrun by idiots, with our state, Montana, having its share as well." It's embarrassing. Yeah. I know. I suck at ciphering, Steve. Part of the bit. And Steve points out the movie Fargo was in North Dakota. God, the things we focus on here. And by the way, our dear friend Alma recommends a TED Talk from Yale, Y-A-E-L, Eisenstadt, E-I-S-E-N-S-T-A-T. Alma says, "This is an excellent synopsis of social media in our present day. It is really informative of the environment outside of our daily lives. How Facebook profits from polarization." You can go after the program to TED.com. Stop telling us when we go to TED.com, Bob. TED.com, Yale Eisenstadt. Probably just search for Yale Eisenstadt, Yale Eisenstadt, and the title is How Facebook Profits from Polarization. Probably watch that this evening after the program's over while I'm killing time waiting for the midnight ride of Bob Kincaid. Listen, my children, and you will hear. We are past the top of the hour. That means that I have filibobstered for a rock-solid 64 minutes. Been a while since we did this, so let's check in with Brad and Desi, the Green News Report. Let's see if there's anything happy in that.
It's Thursday, September 10, 2020.
We are currently facing a statewide fire emergency.
Unprecedented wildfires explode across the western United States.
The fact is, climate change is the real culprit behind what we're seeing right now.
And yes, man-made climate change is to blame. Plus,
I will sign a presidential order extending the moratorium on offshore drilling on Florida's Gulf Coast.
Trump trolls for votes by flip-flopping on offshore drilling ban.
All of that trolling and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It's true. Number one since Teddy Roosevelt. Who would have thought? Trump is the great environmentalist.
Hey, great environmentalist. The West Coast is on fire. Can you at least pretend to give a damn? You're good at pretending. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen with the West Coast on fire thanks to man-made climate change that Donald Trump has helped to make worse. It's only somewhat amusing that he's running around telling everyone he's the greatest environmental president since Teddy Roosevelt.
Or delusional. Or insane. Yeah, kind of.
All of the above.
Evacuations are underway in parts of the western U.S. as hundreds of fast-moving, destructive wildfires erupt across California, Washington, and Oregon, outstripping firefighting capacity. The fires have nearly wiped out entire communities in Oregon and Washington, according to officials. Fire scientists warn we're only just now entering peak fire season, so much worse may be yet to come.
Has Donald Trump even bothered to tweet anything about the West Coast fires?
And not to my knowledge.
Guess he doesn't have any votes to win out here.
As we go to air, a handful of deaths have been attributed to the fires, and that toll is expected to rise. Air quality is so bad in the San Francisco Bay Area that the National Weather Service said it was literally beyond their gauge's ability to measure. In California, a record 2.3 million acres have burned just since August 1st, a 2,000% increase over last year. An extreme heat wave over Labor Day broke heat records across the state, including an all-time high temperature for Los Angeles County of an unheard-of 121 degrees.
It's just a hoax. It's all a hoax.
The heat wave exacerbated tinderbox conditions, sucking the moisture out of trees and vegetation. The fires are so hot and so gigantic that they are creating their own weather, including fire tornadoes that are generating more high winds, sending embers even further. Investor-owned Pacific Gas and Electric, the culprit behind the deadly Camp Fire in 2018, has issued preemptive blackouts during a heat wave and a pandemic in areas where its decrepit equipment could spark more fires. And for the first time, the U.S. Forest Service has closed all national forests in the state. In Oregon, Governor Kate Brown on Wednesday issued a statewide fire emergency as thousands of firefighters battle more than 35 fires. More than 500 square miles have burned in Oregon over just the last few days, destroying several small towns in mere hours. She warned all residents to be on high alert and be ready to evacuate.
I want to be upfront in saying that we expect to see a great deal of loss, both in structures and in human lives. This could be the greatest loss of human lives and property due to wildfire in our state's history.
It is terrible, and it's remarkable that this is not the lead, the front page on every paper and every cable news channel in the country. This is the nightmare you have been warning about now for so many years, Des.
Yep. However, in Colorado, extreme weather whiplash helped for once. The Denver region went from nearly 100 degrees on Monday to a snowstorm on Tuesday that helped tamp down fires there. And of course, there is a direct connection in all of this to man-made climate change. Climate scientists for decades have warned that global warming would intensify weather extremes. Climate policy professor Leah Stokes connected the climate change dots on PBS NewsHour.
What scientists are telling us is that we are entering a period of mega fires where the scale of burning is just beyond what we've seen before. And there isn't any reason to believe that that will stop because we are not taking the climate crisis seriously and we are not reducing fossil fuel emissions around the world. So California really is the canary in the coal mine here.
But except for PBS, corporate news outlets have mostly omitted the link between man-made climate change and the increase in catastrophic heat waves and wildfires. Finally, in a reversal so blatant and transparent that it would be comical if it weren't so deadly serious, climate science denier President Donald Trump in Florida on Tuesday tried to greenwash his anti-environment record, calling himself the number one environmental president in announcing he will extend a congressional moratorium on offshore drilling for Florida, South Carolina, and Georgia that he himself moved to circumvent 3 years ago. Apparently, he thinks voters are too stupid to notice his flip-flop.
Maybe Trump voters are. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
And I'm burning,
Yeah, well, so much for thinking that Brad and Desi might provide a little happy news. But then again, that's kind of silly on my part to begin with because they focus on climate change. And there's just not a hell of a lot of happy news about that to be had these days or anytime soon. Jesus, the to-do list, if we can get rid of the of Nitwit Nero and remove him from office at the ballot box. Well, it's almost too much to contemplate. Oh, speaking of voting, this doesn't bode well. No. Let's go to Wisconsin, where they have a wild-eyed radical right-wing court. According to the Wisconsin State Journal today, quote, the Wisconsin Supreme Court on Thursday temporarily suspended the mailing of absentee ballots for November's presidential election as the court weighs whether to place the, oh my God, please, Green Party presidential ticket on the ballot. Yeah, because that's what Wisconsin needs, is the Green Party presidential candidate. Jesus Christ, that perpetual fucking loser. The order from the conservative-dominated state Supreme Court, which comes a week before the state imposed September 17th deadline to send out requested absentee ballots to registered voters, is in a case brought by Green Party presidential candidate Howie Hawkins and probably funded by no small number of goddamn Republicans, because that's the way the Green Party gets its money. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be the first time. The Wisconsin State Journal says some clerks may have already sent out ballots as they handle an unprecedented amount of requests this year due to COVID-19. The court, in a 4-3 decision with all liberal back justices dissenting, said clerks should hold off on sending out any absentee ballots until it issues a further order in the case. The court also asked the Wisconsin Elections Commission to provide it information by 5 p.m. this evening, detailing whether any ballots have been mailed out to voters, and if so, to whom and when. Oh, great! The Republican thugs, the maggots on the Wisconsin Supreme Court, want to start tracking voters. Well, that's not paranoia-inducing. Oh, hell no. So if we can slow down the mailing of the absentee ballots, we can slow down the degree to which people return them, and maybe, just maybe, if we fuck up the Postal Service a little bit more through the offices of skeevy, crooked, Trump lickspittle Louis DeJoy, well, gosh, maybe we can take Wisconsin out of the mix. Or maybe Nitwit Nero can win it like he did in 2016. As long as Howie Hawkins, perpetual loser, is on the ticket. Fuck. Damn. Oh, and I didn't know this, but Brother Deacon Asa, serving as a member of the Horn Ad Hoc Research Committee this evening, According to Google and Ngram, a tool for the study of the history language, the history of the phrase Cold Civil War, entered the English-speaking vernacular back in the early 1940s. It really caught fire and peaked in 1952. Perhaps, says Brother Deacon Asa, you can tell us the underlying historical context as to what events could have caused that pattern. Ooh, I don't know. McCarthyism? The House Un-American Activities Committee? The blacklists? The government using its massive powers to try to silence dissent? Yeah, I'm just, you know, guessing. Guessing. Interesting. Thanks for that, Brother Deacon. Note coming from Lou. Oh, my God. CBS News reporting 4 meat workers at a Smithfield plant died from COVID-19. The feds fined the company $13,494. We'll have to do some ciphering to figure out what one Smithfield worker's life turns out to have been worth under that fine scheme. And yes, that's a Smithfield plant in where? Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Jesus. And then, another coronavirus death. This one comes from the Columbia, South Carolina area. Richland 2 Elementary School. Demetria Demi Bannister was 28 years old. She taught at Windsor Elementary School. She was diagnosed with coronavirus on a Friday and died the following Monday. Richland 2 spokeswoman Libby Roof said, "With heavy hearts, Richland 2 administrators share this information with permission from Ms. Bannister's parents, who wish to remind others about the seriousness of this disease caused by the coronavirus." She had just started her third year of teaching. Third year of teaching, third grade, that is. Prior to that, she'd taught fifth grade at a school in Columbia, South Carolina. She worked there for 5 years. She was last at Windsor Elementary on August 28th, so that means the virus was already making the rounds even then. But don't worry, the man that our buddy David in South Carolina Stan refers to as McGubna, well, he's not all that upset. I mean, it's nobody he knew. Dr. Baron Davis is the superintendent of Richland 2. He said, "I want to express my sincere condolences to Ms. Bannister's parents, relatives, friends, and school family. While gone from us too soon, Ms. Bannister's legacy lives on through the lives of the students she taught in her 5 years as a dedicated educator. To honor Ms. Bannister's memory, I ask the Richland 2 family to join me in reaffirming our commitment to doing all we can to provide premier learning experiences for all students in the safest environment possible and doing our part to slow the spread of COVID-19. Well, yeah, doing our part to slow the spread of COVID-19, as long as it doesn't involve completely shutting down the fucking school system or shutting down the goddamn state in order to get the virus under control. That's a bit much. like so many teachers, she didn't just teach. She served other functions in the school. She led the school's student choir. And she supervised a club for aspiring singers. She helped lead school spirit initiatives. She was known as Windsor's Songbird, Demetria Bannister. They ought to take her open casket and place it on the front porch right by the front door of the fucking governor's mansion in Columbia, South Carolina. Perhaps Demetria's mama could say, "I want McGovernor to see what he did to my little girl." Well, at least Donald Trump didn't want anybody to get all panicky. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Flavio asking, "Hey, will Smithfield's dead peasant insurance cover the loss in South Dakota?" Well, remember what they say up in South Dakota. Those aren't white people. Because that's what a Republican member of South Dakota government did say. Or was it Wisconsin? Sometimes they run together, these soulless, sycophants of Donald Trump. Let's take a minute, or a little while, and go over and check in with Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Pappy, how you doing?
Well, I'm hanging in for all I'm worth, Scott. Just getting ready to here in another 5 hours or so, make another midnight run to Beckley as Bob Kincaid, amateur Uber driver.
You gotta do it. I thought as a public service to the Horn family, I would show up today to dispel any rumors or reports of my having fallen off the planet. Poor Steve in Georgistan every week has been sending me a welfare check email to make sure that I'm still upright and above ground, along with viewing tips. We share TV viewing tips. But I'm around. I've just been out of the loop, man. I've been occupying my copious free time watching Perry Mason episodes. There's three. Do you realize on my cable system there are three channels who offer several episodes a day of Perry Mason episodes?
You lucky man.
Perry Mason, and then I fire up the old Amazon Prime Video and watch the original Unsolved Mysteries with Bob Stack. Jesus. I just anything to take my mind off of this madness.
I know. Imagine, I mentioned it last night. When you try something new and it turns out to be a dog, it throws you into a fit of depression. Agnes and I thought, surely to goodness, Hugh Laurie, I mean, he's a great actor. And Avenue 5. I'm still not over how awful that was.
Really? What's the premise of it? Now, he was on House, or what was that one-word title that he was on?
Yeah, House.
Was it House?
Yeah,
House.
The
yeah, I never watched it.
Oh, that was a great show. The premise is that there's a giant luxury space liner which has a cast of wacky and unlikable characters, that gets knocked off course and is going to be circling the solar system for 3 years, and non-hilarity ensues.
My, my. See, when you have the great writers, TV writers like Harlan Ellison and others who go on to their big writer's room in the sky, the quality and the content level seems to go with them. Have you ever noticed that, Bob? I don't know. I've been watching the red and blue marks on the big U.S. map. And interestingly, this just in, Trump continues to do well in two states, catatonic and denial. So mark that down in your book of political info for the days to come.
Well, based on the hissies that I've been seeing on the electric TV machine, the real worry is that he's tightening things up in Florida.
Yeah, I heard those reports. You know what I wonder? And that's one of the reasons I called today, to get your take on it. A while back, the big topic of conversation was, when will these fools own up to their mistake and invoke the 25th Amendment? But here's what I wonder. Let's say in less than 50 days, Joe Biden is elected as the next president of the United States with Senator Harris as his capable vice president. Let's say that happens. We've still got to wait until January 20th.
Yeah, I've pointed that out 100 times probably. It's that nightmare wounded duck.
Yeah.
Not lame duck, you know. Angry, yeah. Pissed off, in a corner, wounded duck session that runs from November 4th to January 20th that we'll really have to watch out for, because that's going to be nothing but an exercise in arson.
Oh, I know. Wouldn't that be the proper time to invoke the 25th Amendment? Because, I mean, what can Pence do? I mean, well, what am I saying? If you ever heard him on the radio back when he was a talk show, a right-wing talk host in Indiana, we know what Pence can do. He can talk trash and be a stupid, a dodo head, doo-doo head. But I just, that seems to me that we can save ourselves a multitude of headaches and ass aches by them just quietly sitting down and saying, you know, read through Bob Woodward's new book, you know, and then do the 25th Amendment. You know, because I don't know that Trump would have the balls or the decency to do what every other president has done, except for the presidents, the new presidents who are there by way of their predecessor's assassination or death in office. Every other president has had the decency to sit on the platform while the new guy is being sworn in. Did you honestly believe for half a second that Trump will have even a shred of decency and dignity to do that? I don't think so. It's not easy.
Well,
it
strikes me, Scott, that you're engaging in your sunny optimism again.
Well, here I go again.
Because think for a minute. Back during the impeachment, you had two senators who were not running for re-election, two Republican senators not running for re-election. They were free. And they still voted to acquit, even though they had evidence before them that was incontrovertible of his guilt. Now, what makes you think, and I mean, let's game this out. Let's say that a miracle transpires and we get all kinds of brand new Democratic senators. Let's say both the Republicans lose in Georgia and one in Mississippi, and we keep Doug Jones. Let's say Martha McSally is gone. Noted moderate Susan Collins is gone. That's six. Let's say Mitch McConnell's gone. Seven. Lindsey Graham's gone. Eight. John Cornholio, nine. I mean, let's dream this up real big. do you think that the remaining Republican senators will break with Trump? And if you do, do you think the remaining senators will break with Trump? And if you do, can you pretty please provide me with something resembling evidence or a theory by which they would do that?
Well, yeah, there's that. But wouldn't they, just for history's sake, wouldn't, I don't know. I used to call myself the relentless optimist. Yeah, maybe it's the heat. Got so hot here the other day, I performed an unnatural act with my popsicle. That's how it got here the other day. And it did cool me down there temporarily. And I'm in love with the ice cream man, Bob. Anyway, I don't know.
Well, I've got my local Piggly Wiggly grocer on the hunt because I found it once at Wally World and never again. The Mayfield Creamery Orange Pineapple Ice Cream. If anybody can get it, my Piggly Wiggly grocer will be able to, because when nobody else in West Virginia could get Kaneka, he got Kaneka.
Yeah.
And now he's brought in the Cajun Kaneka. Whoa.
Living large, Bob. You're living large.
You're damn right. When you're the only store in West Virginia that carries Kaneka, I feel special.
Yeah, but like you, getting back to this lame duck period, dead duck period, whatever. What did you call it? Injured duck? Wounded duck. More like wounded rat. You know, you cornered wounded rat. I dread that lame duck period. I truly do, because what is to... I mean, look at what he's tried to get away with and has gotten away with just under usual circumstances when there's plenty of time left on the game clock. You know, what is to prevent him from just... He's like an irresponsible tenant in an apartment house. They've been evicted, and instead of doing the correct thing, packing up all their crap and leaving, they trash the place. You know, pull the fucking sinks off the wall and clog up the toilet and God knows what else. And he's just the type, from what we know of the man, to be a dick. You know? It's not going to be pretty. It truly is not going to be pretty. This election night, if you think he's going to have to get a second tweet device, he's going to be angry tweeting all throughout election night when they're trying to give the fucking returns. You know he is.
Well, even norms like not declaring a winner until the polls are closed in California, Oregon, and Washington.
Yeah.
That will not be observed. Oh, fuck no.
And interestingly enough, one of the other things I was watching in recent weeks, I watched the 1968 election night returns on YouTube from ABC, and then I watched the 1976 returns on NBC on election night way back then. And in neither case, that you got to remember, in 68 it was Humphrey Nixon, and in 76 it was Ford Carter, and neither of those winners and losers acted in any untoward way. Meanwhile, fast forward up to 2020, we've got the tub of guts in the White House, the orange. Tub of toe cheese, okay, Donald J. Trump, who doesn't observe even the most rudimentary conventions and practices in terms of human behavior. He didn't get that gene. Hell, if anything should be clear by now, we should all realize that he is just a massive resentment walking around, on two legs. And it is just not within his skill set to do the proper thing. And that's why I'm just worried sick that he and his buddies in Russia are going to try to do something to further fuck up what is already going to be a rather hectic and chaotic election, what with the fucking virus and the mail-in votes. I'm still carrying my vote, my ballot. Within 48 hours, I am hand-delivering it to the local registrar of voters. And I encourage everybody listening, if they're able to do that safely, to do that. Because, first of all, it takes some of the strain off of the fucking postal system. And second, if you take it to the place where they count the fucking ballots, you know it got there. And maybe I'm being optimistic even with that, but I feel like we're living in extraordinarily strange times, and sometimes we have to take an extra step to preserve and protect and defend our way of life and government. And even here in California, not that I think that any shenanigans are going to take place, but what has already come out with the postal system and selling for a scrap the fucking machines that sort the mail.
Did you see the piles of mail that were dumped in a parking lot in L.A.?
No, I didn't see. Was that recently?
Yes.
Jesus. It's just, you know, it's, and frustrating isn't the word, but it is very frustrating and even disheartening when we get to the state of being that we're currently in. Earlier we were talking about George McGovern. The very first time I voted, and I know it was a snowball's chance in hell, but the very first time I voted was for George McGovern because it was the right thing to do. You know, sometimes you have to do that.
Well, look at the generation of young politicos who got their start with that campaign. Bill and Hillary both worked tirelessly on the McGovern campaign.
I know. Things have definitely changed in this country just in my relatively brief lifetime. It didn't used to be this way. I mean, there was always shady stuff going on in politics, but there were even with the shadiness, there were rules, there were points and lines over which you did not cross.
And if you did, you were punished.
Yeah.
Witness, yeah. Nixon.
Well, people have got to know if their president's a crook. Well, I'm not a crook. My ass. So anyway, I guess I'm horning in on your ray of fucking sunshine territory. But it just upsets that the hell out of me that we just cannot be responsible human beings, some of us in this country, just cannot muster whatever resources necessary to be decent in our behavior and our attitudes and our outlooks.
It's who we are.
Which is why sometimes I have to just jump out of the fucking fracas and watch Perry Mason or Unsolved Mysteries. But then I come back, which is hopefully good.
Well, you've just gotten a suggestion in from James in Illinois. For Scott.
Take the gas pipe?
No, look up Pacific Heights, available on Prime. Speaking of The Tenant from Hell, played by Michael Keaton versus newbie landlords Matthew Modine and Melanie Griffith. That's some vicious landlord-tenant drama.
I know of the movie, but I don't think I may have watched it a long while ago. But I will jot it down for my list of things to do.
Meanwhile, Lou says, "You know, the Unsolved Mysteries UFO shows are pretty good."
That show. That was a top 10, I'm pretty sure it was a top 10 show. It used to run, at least for some portion of the run, Friday nights, I think, on NBC. because I think it was the lead-up show to one of my favorites that nobody's ever heard of, Homicide: Life on the Street.
It was a great show.
If memory serves, but Unsolved
Mysteries. Wasn't Yaphet Kotto in that?
Yes, he was. He was
fantastic,
Captain. Oh God, and I hadn't realized all the things that he was in prior to Homicide. I forget what the movie was. I was flipping around and found a movie that he was in. The Thomas Crown Affair, the original one with Steve McQueen, where he robs the bank.
Yeah, yeah.
He's one of the robbers. That's a great film.
Oh, and by the way, Darlene with a note talking about the Senate. And Chuck Schumer announced today that he is totally hoping to be Senate Majority Leader in the new Congress in 2021. And considering how things work inside the Beltway, well, let's hope against hope that the Triple M threat, Moscow Mitch McConnell, gets his walking papers. Otherwise, he'll continue to own Chuck and the Senate. Well, you know what went down in the Senate today?
The skinny...
Yeah, the skinny stimulus.
That should never have come up for a vote because it was the closest to next to nothing you can possibly get in terms of benefit.
Right, and look, McConnell knew the votes weren't going to be there.
I know.
It was done for campaign purposes. See, them Democrats done hung you out to dry. We're going to give you $1 million apiece. But will the Democrats do that? Hell no!
Yeah. And they're dumb
and somewhere around 33% of the American people will go, I hate them fucking Democrats. I'm going broke because they wouldn't vote with the scientists with Mitch McConnell and the skinny stimulus. That's going to give me some money. I was going to have to go back to the gym and get skinny. That's what they meant by skinny stimulus.
I'm telling you, I really hope that November 3rd is a moment in our lives where a verifiable majority of American voters have a one-word response to these past 4 years, almost 4 years.
No.
And that one, either no or enough. Or if you want to be colorful about it, e-fucking-nough. You know,
we know what hoping gets you.
Well, I know. But don't you think... Now, think back to 2018, the midterms. Weren't there a few surprises in the midterms? Wasn't that sort of a heads up to anybody who was paying attention that at least in the midterms we were willing to apply the brakes somewhat?
Well, yeah, I mean, to the extent that we took the House, yeah.
Yeah. And maybe we'll finish the job in November. Maybe we'll add to the majority in the House, retake the Senate, and you know.
Well, see, and that's what I was saying when I was trying to work with your ineffable sunshiny nature. That's the one scenario: a House and Senate. You know, he's there on election night braying about, I won again. I'm going to owe the inauguration. It's going to be huge. If at the same time the House builds on its majority or just holds what it has, and the Senate is taken by the Democrats, then his vote or his victory, which hopefully will not last past the counting of the mail in, of the absentee ballots. Hopefully, then his victory turns to ashes in his mouth as he realizes that he's probably going to be, he may wind up being the first president to be impeached twice. Because let's get one thing clear. This business with what he said, and it's on tape and everybody can hear it, no matter how much he protests, this business about downplaying the pandemic,
yeah,
is a brutal high crime and misdemeanor. it's a hell of a lot worse than lying to the American people about a blowjob.
Oh, yeah. It's when you've got a it was on one of the NBC, MSNBC shows last night where they were saying if he had acted a week earlier or if he had acted 2 weeks earlier, the thousands of people's lives that likely would have been saved, it was something like 36,000 under one of those scenarios. I mean, it's a crime against humanity that he did that. I mean, there's no other way to describe that. Was it throwing people in ovens? No. It doesn't rise to that level. But then again, give him another 4 years, he may kill 6 million people before it's over. Because I don't have a lot of faith with these vaccines, to tell you the honest to God truth. The day that it's released, I'm not going to run out and get dosed up.
No, I'm not going to get a vaccine recommended by a man who sold meat through the mail.
Or told you to shove, you know, bleach suppositories up your butt or black lights. Get your old black light out of the attic. Your little mini fluorescent black light there. Making that sexual position Zodiac poster just glow like nobody's business. Am I the only one that remembers that thing? Jesus.
I hope so. I don't. Please don't help me. Don't help me understand it.
All right. I'll send you a picture of one.
No, don't. That's fine.
Okay. All right. All right. Calm down, Bob. If you say no, I know. See, this is why I'm a good human being. I know that no means no. And I know the importance of candy, flowers, dinner, and a movie. And a handshake at the door, and I'll go away for a while.
So, you know what Trump tweeted today about Woodward's tapes?
God only knows. They were edited?
Nothing that esoteric.
See, when you ask me, do you know what Trump tweeted? It could be any goddamn thing.
Bob Woodward had my quotes for many months. If he thought they were so bad or dangerous, why didn't he immediately report them in an effort to save lives? Didn't he have an obligation to do so? No, because he knew they were good and proper answers. Calm, no panic.
Jesus.
And someone pointed out with an image of a note from a serial killer. Mr. Police, you could have saved her. I gave you all the clues. This reads like a taunting note from a serial killer.
Well, and this is what I hope.
But I mean, we all understand why he withheld the information. He withheld the information to make a buck. I mean, Bob Woodward is the John Bolton of Bob Woodward's.
Yeah, but there may be that aspect. There likely is that aspect. But I was thinking another reason is the timing of it.
That's always a possibility, too, that this was to inoculate, and that seems to be Paul Krugman's position, that the timing of this release is to inoculate the country against whatever wild, malicious, malignant thing he rolls out as an October surprise. And that could be, I'm more than willing to be wrong in this.
Well, I was thinking of timing in terms of it's going to have more impact less than 2 months ahead of the election than it would have had in the spring of 2020 or even the middle of summer of 2020. Do you get that? I mean, you know, I think,
right, and I mean, there's one tape that's March, but I mean, this is shit that goes up into June.
And since Trump has never actually written a book, he's had a couple of them ghostwritten, but since he's never actually sat down and written a fucking book, he doesn't realize that you have to write the book and you've got to have it, the galleys and the editing that goes into a book and the printing and the binding and the design of the cover and all that shit before you release the book. Now, I know his tweet had to do with certain things on the tapes that were in preparation of the book. I just anything that he says is horseshit. He could say even something that's right, and it would still be horseshit coming from Trump. And the question that American voters have got to put to right in front of their eyes on November 3rd or whenever they vote is, are we really up to and up for 4 more years of waking up every morning and finding a paper sack full of dog crap
flaming
a flame on the fucking doorstep of each and every American? I say no. I say that there's a number of people in this country who don't want that to happen and will vote accordingly. And I hope that, well, I know that you and myself and the Horn family are among that number. I'm tired of flaming paper bags of dog shit on my doorstep every morning. I've had it. Enough. That's the word. That's, you know, it's not the phrase that pays, but it's the word of the day. And the word is enough.
Well, what needs to happen, and again, I go back to that sort of war game thing that was held not too long back. The only outcome to November that does not result in chaos in the streets is an overwhelming victory by Biden.
Yeah, unmistakable.
So we're going to have it, and that's, I think that's why the money is being spent where it's being spent. We've got to have some shocks, okay? We've got to absolutely just blow people's minds. So that means, you know, need Florida. Of course, Florida is the reason Florida is even tight or close is because of that hardcore knot of anti-Castro, you know, he's dead and all, dead-enders and hard cases in the Cuban community who have been reliable Republican votes since the minute they got a dry foot on land. And that's fact.
I know.
So that's Florida. But if we can take North Carolina, hold Virginia, and then shock the world with Georgia and or Texas, that could do it.
Texas would be phenomenal.
And so, you know, people like our dear friend John Bridivo become so important down there. I mean, I don't hold out a lot of hope for West Virginia just because we're too Otne Ute Itbre at this point in time, and we just don't have the right stuff to fix the problem.
When was the last time Texas was carried by the Democrat? Was it Carter in 76?
Yep.
I should know this.
I don't know. Look that up in the Horn ad hoc research department.
Wouldn't that be great? Because see, Texas in some ways has gotten purplish.
Oh, no, Texas will at some point in the near future be irretrievably blue. But the Republicans are trying their dead level best to stave off that day, Scott.
Oh, I know.
And that's what all the hard voter suppression and the soft voter suppression is about. Now, Mark just pointed out, subject line scenario, Rachel Maddow interviewed Michael Cohen. And the interview suggests that if Trump loses, Trump resigns. Has Pence pardoned him of federal charges? Signed, Mark in Florida. By the way, while we're talking, while mentioning Florida, they are just not even trying to, you know, cover it up anymore. the government of the state of Florida is now actively hiding its COVID-19 data, whether it's cases or deaths.
Yeah.
But it's kind of hard to hide that from people who are planning funerals. And frankly, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis is a criminal bioterrorist.
Well, there's a discernible number. I forget what it is, but it was in the news not long ago. People who pay attention to statistics know that each and every year there's a reliable number or percentage of people who pass on under normal circumstances. And this year that number is astonishingly
Yeah, it's way out of round, sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, anybody who, you know, is trying to, you know, fuck with the numbers, or in this case, hide the numbers, or make you jump through flaming hoops to see the numbers. See, and that's all down ballot stuff. The people who perpetrate that shit.
But there's reason to be modestly hopeful for Georgia and Texas. Now, it's an uphill climb. It is by far not a likelihood. But with the, you know, if everybody stands on one leg and puts an arm in the air and holds their tongue just so,
yeah,
it can happen. And interestingly, what Mark said about Michael Cohen saying he'll resign and have Pence pardon him. Well, didn't we game that scenario out a long, long time ago?
Yeah,
because
we did.
That's the only way he can avoid federal liabilities. But the problem is it doesn't relieve him of state exposures.
I know.
And so what he's looking at now is short of being carried out of the office feet first. Whenever he leaves office, he is probably going to one degree or another be dealing with litigation and people and you know, wolves nipping at his heels for the rest of his born days.
Yeah. And it couldn't happen to a more worthy person, or a person more worthy of it, or deserving. Is the word, not worthy, but deserving of it. He has scammed his way from jump. You look back over his history, you know, even in his educational, his higher educational career, such as it was.
Oh, yeah, where he cheated his way into Wharton, sure.
Yeah, you know. The guy is not qualified to be the assistant night manager at an all night drugstore. So what is he doing in the highest executive office in the land, aside from fucking up and being a dick? You know, sometimes I just want to take the American public and just shake them.
Yeah, I know.
Just give them a good shaking and say, what is wrong with you? Have you lost your mind? You know, and I would think that there are some voters in 2016 who said, well, this would be fun. Hey, let's elect Donald Trump as president and see what happens. Those people should be just taken out into the woods and then drive off as quick as you can and wave to them as they're running after the van, you know? And it's funny, I guess I've lost all of my friends on Facebook who are conservatives, because I post, and you're on my Facebook, you see what I post. I never get a word of defense about their man, their fearless leader, no matter what I post. And I'm very judicious about what I post. Everything that I post is verifiable, unless it's a joke post, you know? And maybe they don't say anything because they can't say anything. Or maybe they know that if they try to play that game, they know that I'm bright enough to come back and say, call bullshit on their bullshit, you know? Well, the guy's here to do the lawn. I may have to go here, unless you don't. If you don't want to hear the sound of the fucking weed eater or whatever he's got going out there, and it just upsets the squirrels to no end. And they come out to get their nuts, and then this guy shows up making noise. So maybe I ought to go, but I wanted to touch base with you, throw a few things into the conversational mix, and let people know I had not, like, died or whatever. Oh, he's getting closer. I better go.
All right, Scott, you have yourself a good evening. And by the way, Ron in Raleigh is contenting himself by working his way through 7 seasons, get this, of Hogan's Heroes.
Oh, my God.
And Jimmy in the Great Northwest is way deep into Columbo.
Columbo's great. Who was I think it was Thomas from FYI who used to love Columbo and was upset when they took it off one of his channels. I got to go. This man's making so much fucking noise. It sounds like Trump.
Take care, Scott.
Sounds
see
like
ya.
Trump out there in front eating up my grass.
All right.
All right, Bob.
Later. Bye. Our buddy Scott being overwhelmed by the guy with the weed eater. I would not want to be a guy running a weed eater in San Diego because Scott in San Diego sent me a live cam from a hotel there by the shore, and San Diego's air is brown and tawny. And I wouldn't want to be weed eating out in that stuff. I mean, and I'm a guy who has a sincere appreciation for the smell of two-cycle exhaust in the morning. It smells like victory over the weeds. Hogan's Heroes, Steve in New York, says, Trump, to paraphrase Schultz, I know everything. Yeah. And I didn't realize this, Billable Rick pointing out, Yaphet Kotto also played alongside Arnold Schwarzenegger in the movie Running Man. Richard Dawson's role in that movie, since we've had a Hogan's Heroes reference, was as a game show host. Maybe what I need to do, if Agnes would put up with it, maybe what I need to do is, how about the entire collection of Green Acres? Now that would be wacky and madcap and zany. That's a thought. Then again, I also have season 1 of WKRP, and that's always good. Escapism. It's never been more important than it is right now. Nope. Hey, let's see what's going on over on the... And by the way, we've still got a $20 challenge, the $20 Don't Choke on a 3-Foot Putt Challenge, courtesy of Billable Rick. And if that's met, he kicks in another 20, and we go from 395 or 295 down to 235, and we finish off yesterday's fundraising, or we're only $35 away from it. So it'd be great if we didn't leave that challenge laying on the table. Thank you, Billable Rick. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good evening, Bob.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Nice and cold out here in Colorado Springs after being nice and hot 2 days before.
That's just nuts. I mean, it's handy.
It's great.
It damped back some of your fire risk, but still.
Yeah, that was the good part of it, but man, wow. A 50-degree temperature drop in one day. And it didn't happen all at once, but it was 90 one day and 35 the next day for the high temperature. And obviously the low temperatures were similar in nature. But and of course you get the conservatives who laugh at that and say, huh, yuck, yuck. That proves global warming, doesn't it? And yeah, actually it does, but you're too dumb to know that, so I won't try to explain it to you. So, you know, it's just crazy weather. It's the fires, and this front was a very strong front. It extended, by what the descriptions I heard, was a straight down from the north front that would have extended from the west coast, Seattle, you know what the fronts look like when they come down. Yet California didn't get a bit of that cold front at all. Nothing to relieve their suffering with the fires. And I don't know what else you have to do to prove to people that whatever you want to call it, global warming, climate change, whatever word you want to use, it's definitely happening. And with all the smoke from these fires, how much does that affect the environment, both long-term and short-term?
Oh, God. The danger to, you know, the human ability to, you know, breathe.
Yeah, for me, I use my inhaler maybe once a year, Bob. I don't get sick like I used to, but about once a year I have to use my inhaler. For the past 2 days, 3 days before the fire, I was using my inhaler once a day. It wasn't bad, but I was doing the inhaler just to get rid of the effects of the smoke. And I'm normally not affected by it, but when it stays around for that long, it's bound to affect anybody with any respiratory problems at all, even minor ones. So I was glad for the cold front, and to that extent that at least it blew all the smoke out of here, but the cold front is going to go away soon. It's going to be 70 by Friday, Saturday.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And, yep.
Well, God, if the Rona doesn't get people, the pneumonia will.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about that the other day. How many people are going to get sick from it being 90? Well, actually, it was 97 on Saturday, 90 on Sunday, and 35 on Monday. So, you know, it's to go from those extremes, from record high to record low in a matter of 2 days, what are you gonna do about it? But get sick. And so, but anyway, I just wanted to give you a quick call here, and before I forget, I want to mention, you said you had a $20 challenge on the table?
I do. Courtesy of Billable Rick, the don't yip on the 3-foot putts. Don't choke on the 3-foot putts challenge.
Well, if you'll allow it, because I still don't have a computer, I hope to have one fairly soon here, because I still don't have access to anything other than my Alexa. But if you'll allow it, I'll be sending a $10 donation through the U.S. mail.
It all counts.
And I will send that in honor of our friend Jude on the West Coast and Women's Standing. It was her birthday this week, and I just want to send that in honor of her.
So. Well, that is just that's lovely, Kevin. Thank you very kindly. And it is Jude's birthday week, so hopefully she has had a happy one. And by the way, you got a note from our buddy Jug, you know, Jug of Punch. He says, "Say hello to Kevin for me. Great to hear him."
It's good to hear from you too.
Lou has a question for you. Ask Kevin if he'll still root for the Mets if Nitwit Nero buys them.
I think I would have to. I think I'd have to become a Dodger fan, and that if that happened, there are certain things with which I will not put. But then again, I don't think our esteemed president has the money to buy them, does he? Not after he gets out of office and is going to be hounded by legal fees.
Well, but now he's saving big bucks because Bill Barr is going to be his personal lawyer, and he's not going to have a bill. You know, in the E. Jean Carroll civil suit. Remember? Yeah.
I don't think he's going to get away with that one, but I think if that goes up to the Supreme Court for them to litigate that, I would think they would rule against that. Even being conservatives if they are, I don't think they'd get a majority on that one. It's just too blatant an attempt to. And how can you, good Lord,
how can you commit a dignity tort in the course and scope of your employment? There is no exactly. Credible argument to be made that there is a requirement that the president engage in defamation as a function of his employment.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just sloppy. It's sloppy.
And the mentioning the 33%, there's where I really question the intelligence of the 33% when they see things like that. And they would still defend the president on even something like that. How could they? You know, for all their Christian upbringing, how can they defend him?
In Trump's name, they did to Jesus what Judas did to Jesus for relatively less money when you get right down to it.
I think you ought to rephrase that. Trump did to them what Judas did to Jesus by his own words over this whole coronavirus thing. You know, speaking of that, you mentioning that down in Florida, I read through the phone, the NFB Newsline, it reads the paper to me. And I generally read the paper every night, and I go through the obituaries, there's a way to go to sleep, and they're all one-line obituaries for the most part down in Florida, because, you know, the newspapers have got to make money, and you can't, down in Florida, you can't have an obituary anymore, a full obituary. They're all, for the most part, with the exception of a few, one-line obituaries. John Doe, beloved of the family and friends, see full obituary at xyzfuneralhome.com. But even in reading those, every fourth or fifth obituary says something like, John Doe, beloved of the family and friends, died of coronavirus on August 25th, 2020. And I do think people are starting to point out, because of the governor trying to hide the corona death, that's their way of making sure those deaths don't stay hidden, just by putting that simple little line in the obituary column.
Well, I saw a story in the last day or so. Let me see if I can find it. A young woman talking about the death of her father, and it's just a sad, sad story. And apparently you've got a speaker on in the background because I'm hearing me, but no worries.
Nope, I don't have anything here.
Oh, here it is. Kristen Urquiza. This is the young woman who spoke at the Democratic convention last month. She said her father's only pre-existing condition was trusting Donald Trump. Last night, appearing on CNN, she said, "I'm so enraged. His words confirmed that the president intentionally lied to the American public about the severity of this crisis. It's undeniable, and it's inexcusable." And what she means by all of this is that she tried her best to get her dad to take it seriously. But in late May, even though his daughter was begging him not to go, he went to a karaoke bar with friends. And before he left, he told her that he knew the virus was still out there, but that Donald Trump and the governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey, said everything was fine. He looked at her and asked her, why would they lie?
Oh, gee.
She was interviewed by Aaron Burnett, and Aaron Burnett asked her, do you think things would have changed for your father if the president had said what he said to Bob Woodward to the American people as early as February and then consistently? And Ms. Urquiza responded, absolutely. He trusted him, and the president betrayed him and tens of thousands of other people across the United States. Listen, in late May, when the state of Arizona was opening up, I was telling my dad, look, Dad, it's still not safe. And my dad's retort to me was, well, Kristen, I hear what you're saying, but why would the president and the governor say it's safe if it's not? I couldn't compete with the lies from the White House, and because of that, my father passed away. It is inexcusable. And then she went on and said, it's time for Trump to resign.
Yep. Yep. Now, 150 or so senators in the Senate would say the exact same thing, but they don't have the spine to do that. And what does it say about our country? You were talking about that little girl that died of the corona a while back in the show. What does it say about our country that we aren't enraged as a country that the president did what he did and caused the death of this little girl? You know, so it just, I'm at least proud of my parents down in Florida. Yes, they're Trumpers, but they're not to the point of believing him on the corona, because they're still wearing the mask when they go out, and they think the people that don't are very stupid. And I had a cousin that was going to come down and visit him, but that cousin expressed that she doesn't believe in wearing mask, and they told him, nope, don't come.
No.
So
I know someone who is dealing with some family. There's a baby on the way soon. And a member of the family said, well, I'll be right there. And they tried to be really nice and said, no, it's okay. No, just wait. We'll get everything. Just wait. And she kept saying, I'm coming. And of course, a COVID idiot, a mask hole. And they finally, she wouldn't take polite for an answer. And finally, they had to say, don't come. You're not welcome. You won't get through the door. There's a pandemic going on.
Yep.
And the number of people, Kevin, who simply refuse to acknowledge the reality of this is, I wish I could say shocking, but all too typical for this country in this time.
Yeah.
And by the way, Lou with another message for you says, in lieu of the Trump-owned Mets, Kevin would root for the Dodgers? I'm going to tape that and save the evidence in perpetuity. You could always just be a Braves fan.
Honestly, I'd have to root for the Rays down in Tampa.
Yeah, it did. I was saddened to see the passing of Tom Seaver.
Oh, yeah.
We lost a couple of greats in the last week, Tom Seaver and Lou Brock.
Yep.
The best story, speaking of Dodgers, Lou Brock wasn't just fast and a fine hitter and a good fielder. He was also constantly looking for an edge and an innovator. So way back before everybody had a video camera in their pocket, Lou Brock would show up with a, you know, like a Super 8 movie camera or whatever. And one day, Don Drysdale looked over at him, said, "What the hell are you doing?" And Lou Brock responded, "Oh, just taking some home movies, man." And Don Drysdale said, "Well, I don't want to be in your fucking home movies." And the next time, Lou Brock got into the batter's box against Don Drysdale, he threw at his head.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean,
and that
one of the most amazing things I saw was a picture that was posted when Tom Seaver passed away. Keith Olbermann posted a picture and he said, "I shared this years ago with Tom Seaver." He said, "I'd only seen Seaver's motion one other time, and I found it in the historical archives." Because, you know, Seaver had that motion where the knee, the right knee of his pants were always dirty because they scraped the ground with every pitch.
Yep.
And what he showed him was a picture of Christy Mathewson, who played for the Giants, the New York Giants, in 1911. And it is the same identical motion. And he said Tom Seaver was just gobsmacked.
Yep. Seaver was my favorite player growing up. As a young Mets fan, and I became a Mets fan growing up in Florida because I was sick during the 1969 playoffs and World Series. I didn't really have an interest in sports until then, and I was sick at home, and I watched the Braves playoff series and World Series against the Orioles, and that's how I became a Mets fan, is watching
the Miracle Mets.
The Miracle Mets. And then, of course, I trained in St. Pete, so I used to get my dad to drop me off and watch the games there.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah. And back then, the Cardinals and the Mets trained at the same complex. So you got two for the price of one, so to speak, because they were training using the same complex. So
wow.
Sometimes you get to see both a Mets game and a Cardinals game.
Oh, what,
what a great
way to spend springtime in Florida in your boyhood. Kevin, it's good hearing from you, my friend. Stay warm until it's time not to be warm anymore, and then stay cool.
We will see about that because, as you know, that magical day is coming up, fall. So.
Oh, I know. All too soon. What, 13? 12 days? Right.
12 days, yeah. So, and we've actually had meteorological fall already, so hey, there you go.
I'll have to get the Ugg boots out and the puffy coat soon and then I'll be freezing in here.
Well, you'll have to drag the smoker out at least one more time before fall.
Oh, no. I'm not done by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, I've got to kill 3 hours between the end of this program and going to pick up Ferg. And I think I just might put some Kaneka on the griddle.
Oh, that sounds good.
Because they started getting the Cajun Kaneka in up at Wiggling Pig. And, well, that's some fine, fine eating.
I couldn't do the Cajun, but I can do the Kaneka, so.
Oh, it's magnificent. Kevin, have yourself a good evening, my friend. Good to hear from you.
You too, Bob.
All right.
Yep.
Bye now.
Take care.
Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. And let's see. Thank you to Gary. Gary jumped in alongside Kevin. And so Billable Rick's Don't Choke on the 3-Foot Putts Challenge has been met. And we are now down to 220 bucks to go to finish up to this evening. So another 20 bucks rolls in between now and 8 o'clock, and we'll be done with yesterday. So thanks very kindly, Kevin and Gary, and thank you, Billable Rick. Steve in New York says, if Trump bought the Reds, I'd stop watching baseball. I can't even contemplate the horror. I was raised on the Reds. That just, no. Another question from Steve. Do you like Cincinnati chili or do you hate America? Oh, dear. I guess it's the latter, Steve. I've tried. God knows I have. I've tried to like Cincinnati chili. Gold Star and whatever that other one is. But I just, for the life of me, cannot get used to the idea of chili that's actually spaghetti sauce that's flavored with sugar and cinnamon. I just can't get there. But I tried. I tried. There's a place in Tribeca, Steve says, whose owner came from Cincinnati. He came up from Cincinnati. It took him 3 days on a train. No, wait, that's a different song. On the last Monday of the week, he has Cincinnati night, of the month. On the last Monday of the month, he has Cincinnati night and serves Grater's ice cream, Cincinnati chili, and Montgomery Inn ribs. That may be my next little piece of normal. Those Montgomery Inn ribs are damn good. Never had Grater ice cream. I'm just going to be thrilled if my grocer up at the Wiggling Pig can find me Mayfield Creamery orange pineapple ice cream. Found it once, and then it was gone. Oh, that stuff's so good. Best I've ever eaten. It's the very same stuff, flavor-wise, as what's served at Trowbridge's on North Court Street in Florence, Alabama, and has been since about 1917. If Trump bought the Reds, Lee in New York says, I think you meant the Reds bought Trump. Yes, Tovarich, that's exactly what I meant. One more crush passed, says Ron in Raleigh. One of the prettiest women to appear in the movies, Olivia de Havilland, passed away July 26th at the age of 104. I still watch the 1936 version of Robin Hood whenever it's on. She and Errol Flynn worked so well together. And I guess she had a spat with her sister and never spoke to her again. Wow. But, yes, I just draw a line at watching Gone with the Wind ever again. I remember Tom Seaver. Another note. When he came to the Reds to work and play under the legendary Sparky Anderson. He was great and a pitcher who could actually hit. I was so sad to hear of his loss. Rest in peace, Tom. You're starting in the Heavenly League with the Angels versus the Padres. The nice thing is you get to choose which side you're on, with your buddy Dave in the blind sitting in the celestial riverfront. Scott says this may change your mind about Cincinnati chili and recommends Camp Washington chili. I used to stop in for half a dozen Coney's chili dogs on my way into my afternoon drive shift at WNOP. Real Jazz 740. Does it still have the sugar and the cinnamon in it? I have a feeling I'm in trouble because I got Steve in New York on the line. Hey, Steve.
Hello. You're not in trouble. You just hate America.
Misguided. Yes, horribly yes. Misguided.
Yes. I'm going to ask a trivia question for you and for anybody in the Horn family. Whom did the Mets trade for to get Seaver? Or whom did they trade to get Seaver?
Oh, God.
I think he might have been Rookie of the Year, but he was a bust after he came to the Mets.
Okay, the Seaver... Seaver was drafted by the Braves organization, wasn't he?
Could be. I don't know. but I know, you know, but I know the Reds traded for him.
Oh no! Oh, you're asking about the trade deal between the Reds and the Reds and the Mets.
Yes.
So who did the Reds send to the Mets?
Mm-hmm.
You got me.
Pat Zachary.
I remember the name. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a hot property at the time.
Yeah, I think he may have been Rookie of the Year, or pretty close. But let me tell you what, I used to love to watch Seaver. There were a few pitchers that had these absolutely beautiful motions. Seaver had a beautiful motion. I thought Juan Marichal had a beautiful motion.
Oh, that kick!
That big kick. Gibson had a beautiful motion. Probably my favorite was Steve Carlton.
Yeah, but I tell you what, just for pure fun, there was nothing quite like watching the motions of either Luis Tiant or Kent Tekulve.
Yeah, I was just thinking Luis Tiant, that kind of shaky motion. If I'm not mistaken, he played for the Sox in the 75 World Series.
Yeah, the Red Sox, yeah.
Yeah, Red Sox. No, I like to, yeah. And Tekulve, if you remember Dan Quisenberry?
Yeah.
He had kind of that submarine motion like Tekulve did.
But any one of those three, it would have been terrifying. It just had to have been terrifying, because what's he even looking at?
Yeah,
I mean, Luis Tiant was looking at the backside of his the backside of his skull.
Mm-hmm. No, I know.
You know, it's like, I hope he knows I'm up here.
Yeah, I get it. There was another guy who played for the Braves. His name was Gene Garber.
Oh yeah, Gene Garber. Yeah, another Submariner.
Yeah, and he would actually turn before his motion was that he would actually turn and look at second base, and wouldn't actually look towards the plate until right before he released the ball. He was a neat one. You know, I tell you what, it truly is uniquely American. There's just something about baseball, and I know the rest of the world, frankly, just doesn't get it. But there's just, and it's not a knock on them. It's like it seems to be generally a uniquely American thing. But I don't know if I told you, my grandpa, I think I may have, not my grandpa, my uncle passed last Friday.
No, I didn't. I didn't realize that.
Okay, yeah, he passed last Friday around 10 o'clock. All of the memories just started. All the memories I could tell you that he used to take me to he had season tickets with the Bengals from the second year that they existed until maybe 10 years ago. And he used to take me to games all the time. So I saw some when they had some really good teams, when Forrest Gregg was coach, back when Sam Wicky Wacky Weish was coach. It was just fun.
Were you there for the Icky Shuffle?
I believe I was, because that's when Weish was coach, at least maybe I think for his final couple years. Yeah, such great times. My uncle, you know, he used to come to my hockey games, and we went on fishing trips up into my dad, my uncle, my aunt, and my three cousins used to go on fishing trips up into Canada. And whenever we would go from Ohio up into through Michigan up into Canada, we would always go to Mackinac Island.
Oh, beautiful place.
Oh, it was gorgeous. It's an iconic thing to take a bike ride around the island. So we would rent tandems and double up and take the 8 mile trip around the island. And
that's where Jane Seymour and
Somewhere in Time,
The Penny.
Yep. Yes. or for, based upon the book called Bid Time Return, which my dad read. Yeah, it's just my uncle wants his ashes spread over Mackinac Island, so he's going to be cremated, and at some point in the future, we're going to, you know, everyone's going to do a memorial service and probably, not probably, but try to gather up in Mackinac Island and do that, even though it's not legal, but fuck that. But on a personal note, you know, I the fact that I could not go to say goodbye to my uncle, I can't even mention his name anymore. I just can't. You know, I wish I could say.
Yeah, well, you know, for the sake of posterity, and it doesn't necessarily apply since your uncle's going to be cremated. Mm-hmm. It would be good, I think, again, for the sake of posterity, and maybe for the families themselves, Ms. Erquez there, when they buried her father, his marker should say, killed by.
You want to hear the irony?
What?
My uncle voted for Trump.
There you go.
And the other thing, too, is, and this was years ago, he and I had this conversation. He voted for Obama. And I remember him telling me, he said, I thought Obama would be the person to unite this country. So, you know, my uncle... You know, notwithstanding my
nil nisi bonum, right? But he must have thought this country was better than it is,
or wanted to. I mean, Bob, my uncle grew up in Greenville, Ohio. Anybody can look at Greenville, Ohio, and the Treaty of Greenville, and that's like the iconic small town America stuff.
I've seen some of the just the few occasions that I've driven across Ohio, you know, east to west. Mm-hmm. That small town America is all over. You know, there's a town square that's got a courthouse in the middle of it, and the road goes around it, and the town's built around it, and without fail, almost all of those little towns are dead.
Yeah, it's sad. I think to the extent that Greenville is not dead, it's only because that's where KitchenAid. Was headquartered. It's the KitchenAid Museum is in quote unquote downtown Greenville. There is a restaurant there called the Made Right. Anyone can look it up.
Oh God, I've heard about Made Rights.
And they have they're famous for the gum wall, where in the drive-thru, on the wall leading to the drive-thru, it's got all this gum.
That's only a little bit disgusting, but, you know.
Oh, it's extremely disgusting. But, I mean, these are like little icons that I grew up with, and, you know, I haven't been.
And they have all been picked to pieces by the internal strife that's been created in this country.
Yeah.
And the division. I forget the name of the town in Ohio. It was either the Post or the New York Times wrote a, you know, huge article about how the town just came completely unglued when a couple of women went downtown to hold up Black Lives Matter posters, because in no time flat, Facebook was aflame, whatever the name of the town was, that page saying, Antifa's coming here and they're going to burn down our town. Wrong accent, of course, but, you know.
That's not too far off. I mean, certainly Southern Ohio is that accent.
Now, if you ever want to hear somebody wax pastoral and lyrical about small town Ohio, the guy to hear do that is Guy James. I haven't heard from Guy in a long time, and I gotta check in with him and see if he's okay. He's down in Florida now. Last I checked, you know, somewhere around Sanibel Island. But he came from a farming family.
Gotcha.
In Ohio.
Is he the guy who emails periodically, who's a big Buckeye fan?
We haven't heard from him in a long, long time. Usually it's by call, because he's a broadcaster in his own right. My God, that man has a voice that makes me sound like a soprano. Well, Bob, you know, we were together the night of Obama's first inauguration, and that was the night that we walked up into had to struggle to get to our hotel because everything was so many roads were shut down for the inauguration. And he walked into an Indian restaurant and said, "Do y'all serve beef?"
Oh, my God. Well, I mean, to be fair,
some do. There was one that was Muslim owned and they did serve beef, but we were in the wrong restaurant and the look of horror. But he won't eat chicken, won't eat pork, because he grew up farming hogs and chickens, and says nope, just ain't gonna happen.
It's funny you say that because I knew a number of people who grew up on beef farms. And I emailed about this not too long ago. They'll make sure that their beef is cooked like beyond well done because they don't want to see.
And Guy will not eat veal. And by the way, the little town in Ohio that came all unglued thanks to Scott in San Diego and JR in Columbus, Bethel, Ohio.
Oh shit! That was really close to where I used to live.
Yeah,
that was a country town near Dayton.
Yeah, they came completely undone. I mean, just violence and the town's not okay.
And if it's the same place, wait a minute. No. I'm thinking Bethel Township, but Bethel the town. Nah, I guess I don't know where it is. But, you know, I was talking to a friend of mine today, and the things that are going on right now, I'm trying to think what really worries me. And, you know, I would maintain to anybody that I'm not scared that Trump is going to lose the vote. What I'm scared is that we won't get the vote counted to show that. But bigger than that, Bob, and I've talked to people who were alive during Vietnam and they see the same division, but it just strikes me as I wonder if this country is so divided at this point that it's irreconcilable. And
I would ask you, to what extent has this country not been so divided that it was irreconcilable? I think we've carefully hidden those divisions for 150 years, and perhaps longer.
I just don't know. But it never seemed to me. I mean, my grandmother grew up; she was an Eisenhower Republican, but she wasn't despicable. My grandmother was the, you know what, honestly.
Oh, no, those 1950s Republicans were salt of the earth, church going, good God-fearing types. But because I'm a guy who's never been anything but what I am, a Democrat, and a liberal progressive one into the bargain, I can't get past history. And the fact of the matter is, Harry Truman, you know, said, nope, just not going to run again, not going to do it. And so consequently, in 1952, Eisenhower, who went back and forth over whether to be a Democrat or a Republican, decided to side with the Republicans, gets his own 8 years. And if there's, I mean, so we praise him for warning the country against the power and influence of the, of what in his original draft of the speech he called the military-industrial congressional complex.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing he did was stop dead in its tracks Harry Truman's plans for universal access to medical care. We would not be having the debates that we're having today if what Truman wanted to do had come to fruition. But he could, he did as much as he could do with his executive powers, but was eventually hamstrung by what he called the do-nothing, whatever number Congress it was.
Sure.
But look, that's also a time of the post-war boom. Everybody had a job. No, there was no such thing as a medical bankruptcy. And the people of that generation said, why?
And you know what they had? They had two things that we don't have now. They had a robust GI Bill for men who came back from World War II. And they had at least an increasing number of people joining, unionizing. So the need, like you just said, probably wasn't as palpable. But I get what you're saying. But there didn't seem to be that hateful element.
No. At that point in time, the most hateful people in the United States, in just a broad brush kind of way of speaking, were conservative Southern Democrats. And in a short period of time, say by 1968 with Nixon's Southern strategy, they would begin the transformation into conservative Southern Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And so then those conservative, the ones who were still conservative Southern Democrats, when they heard Ronald Reagan give his states' rights speech on top of the bloody ground of Cheney, Schwerner, and Goodman in Neshoba County, Mississippi, they knew he was their boy. And so they became the much vaunted, and this is why I throw up in the back of my throat a little bit every time I hear the term, Reagan Democrats.
Yeah.
Reagan Democrats is just another way of saying fucking racists.
Yeah, I was just going to say racist, yeah.
Oh, I got to share something with you. Granted, I'm just walking on your nickel, but
dude, Bob,
you're gonna love.
Wait a minute, Bob.
Yes,
Bob,
yes.
And we've talked about you're way too apologetic. At least with me, you ain't got to be that way.
Yeah. Okay. So get this. Our pal out San Diego way. O-Pipe Down on Twitter said, you called it, Bob Kincaid, and this is from a couple of days ago, in regard to the fires in California, a person by the name of Alyssa Azar tweets a whole thread, one of which is, so we just got a few guns pulled on us. Pictures from Oregon, Molalla, Oregon. So we just got a few guns pulled on us. We got three guns pulled on us at a militia-style checkpoint. None of us are white. One of the dudes with the guns, picture, first there were three men who approached me, more cars showed up. And then this. We're safe. It's scary knowing there are people who legitimately think Antifa liberals are setting these towns on fire. We're very clearly documenting and interviewing folks. Our pictures were taken, and so was the car and license plate. And I predicted this a couple of nights ago. that the maggots would start saying, oh, this Sandy Fog burning all these fires. Sometimes it's just downright aggravating being this far out in front of the fucking curve. Oh, and by the way, one other giggle. As he got off the plane today for his super spreader rally in Michigan, the music playing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God, here's the irony. I know the goddess, she does not sleep.
Fortunate son.
Oh, my God. Can I just, you know what? I'm almost at the point.
Michael McFall tweeted it. David in South Carolina, Stan, sent it along to me. The irony. I love that song. Listen to the words. He was quote tweeting Dave Weigel. Fortunate son plays as Trump deplanes an entry for the Nobody Listened to the Lyrics Hall of Fame.
Bob, you know what we have to seriously do? We have to seriously entertain the notion that there are moles in his campaign trolling him and he doesn't even fucking know it. I mean, these would be the same people trolling Reagan when he played Born in the USA. And that's another one of those songs, if you listen to the lyrics, you're like, oh, that's not what
right. But no, it's not necessarily trolling, because actually, Steve, what it is just, it's endemic to the white wing mindset. For instance, I'll never forget the day years and years ago when I just happened to be driving along and just happened to hear the intro to the Sean Hannity radio program.
Oh, God. And you're still alive.
And it was a very popular country song whose chorus was a woman resoundingly singing, "Let Freedom Ring." Well, I mean, gosh, we need an intro song for Sean Hannity's program. What's better than Let Freedom Ring? I mean, this is a program about liberty. Freedom. Sit, Liberty. Sit. There's only one problem. The song, I'm looking it up right now. No.
Hey, let me say something real quick.
Yeah, go ahead, Wallen.
This is directed to Scott out in San Diego, and it's this. Stop making yourself so scarce. I need to be hearing from you periodically. I want to know that you're okay. Okay? If you hear me, Scott, great. I just want to know that you're okay, because I get worried about you when I don't hear from you for a while.
So, among other things, the song formed the title of his book early on, Let Freedom Ring. It turned into his it turned into his book title. And I'm still there it is. Yeah, there it is. Martina McBride. The name of the song is Independence Day. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And she sings, like I said, strongly, Let Freedom Ring. Now, here's the problem. If you go to the rest of the lyrics, it's a totally different story. Well, she seemed all right by dawn's early light, though she looked a little worried and weak. She tried to pretend he wasn't drinking again, but Daddy'd left the proof on her cheek. And I was only 8 years old that summer, and I always seemed to be in the way, so I took myself down to the fair in town on Independence Day. Well, word gets around in a small, small town. They said he was a dangerous man, but Mama was proud, and she stood her ground. But she knew she was on the losing end. Some folks whispered and some folks talked, but everybody looked the other way. And when time ran out, there was no one about on Independence Day. And then, let freedom ring, let the white dove sing. And it's got both wings, apparently, this dove. Let the whole world know that today is a day of reckoning. Let the weak be strong, let the right be wrong. Let the roll the stone away, let the guilty pay. It's Independence Day. Now, that's what he uses for his intro. Well, she lit up the sky that 4th of July. By the time that the firemen come, they just put out the flames and took down some names and sent me to the county home. Now, I ain't saying it's right or it's wrong, but maybe it's the only way. Talk about your revolution. It's Independence Day. So it's about a woman, an abused woman, who kills her abuser by burning the house down around him. And Sean fucking Hannity was too clueless to ever figure it out. So, I mean, so this comes as part of a piece, whether it's Trump, the fortunate son, or Trump knocking on heaven's door, or Trump live and let die. Yeah, all of it. All of it. So,
I'm going to say one last thing that I'm going to, because I see it, I see we're getting close to the time. The one thing that really has begun to worry me, and like I said about not being, about being irreconcilable, is there just seems to be a, and again, I you know, I wasn't alive during Vietnam, so I don't quite know, or I don't know. But I don't see how this country doesn't break up, at least into certain regions.
Already has. It already has.
Yeah, it's just like the. But you know what I'm saying. I mean, I.
Yeah,
I don't,
we're not gonna go through the nastiness of a formal constitutional divorce, because the post Civil War Supreme Court said that it had settled the whole secession thing. And it's treated as generally settled. But we've been divided. There's a in Pat Conroy's novel The Prince of Tides, he has his character talk about the degree to which Southerners, and he puts it this way, make an art of hating New York. And you know, down home, oh, New York City, God damn it, a bunch of heathens. Until they get to sneak away and go hang out in New York for a while. And then they love it.
Or when they can use 9/11 as a political. I know that's a.
Oh, I know. And tomorrow's that day. And we're going to have to just deal with the grief orgy. And that sounds very uncaring on my part. And I apologize for it coming off that way.
Well, what I do is this. September 11th for me, well, my uncle who died last Friday, tomorrow would have been his birthday. But I also asked people, I said, what very momentous occasion happened on September 11th in 1985? And that was the date, and I remember everything about it because I watched it and saw it in the paper. At 8:01 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on a 2-1 low outside slider, Pete Rose made 41-92 against Eric Schau, who played for the San Diego Padres. Pete hit a single into left field. It was a line drive. It bounced, and it was thrown back into the field by Carmelo Martinez. Steve Garvey caught the ball on first base. And Marge Schott gave him a red Corvette from her dealership with the license plate PR4192.
Wow. Well, there's one more September 11th moment. And we got to go back a little further.
I know this because I actually looked at this date. For some reason, on that date, there's a number of kind of momentous things that happened on that date.
The Battle of Lake Champlain, also known as the Battle of Plattsburg, September 11th, 1814. American naval force won a decisive victory against a British fleet.
Was that Admiral Perry? Did he,
I'm not sure who it was.
Because my uncle and I, we used to go, or not my uncle, but uncle and a couple other people used to go to Put-in Bay up in way, way, way northern Ohio. on fishing trip a couple times, and there's actually a monument up there called, I think it's called Perry's Monument, actually.
So it's fascinating because he's managed to stay in the military even after he was found out to be a traitor. Major General Jamie Wilkinson, 1813, was put back in command for an invasion plan against Montreal. Now, this is the guy who sold out the Americans, the United States, to the Spanish crown, and was the key witness against Aaron Burr.
Oh,
when in fact he had been as up to his eyeballs in treason as anything Burr could have been accused of.
Yeah, that's why I love this program, because I always learn shit that I just don't know, because you truly are the grand poobah of the art of word knowing. Now, your ciphering is definitely
leaves a little to be desired, yes.
Yes. And I, you know what, when I was emailing earlier, I thought I got to a point where I was like, I really feel like kind of the nerd guy going, "Yes, but you didn't put a comma in there." And I thought, "Steve, just shut up. It doesn't matter."
Shut the fuck up, Donnie.
Shut the fuck. Yeah, that's exactly. And I thought, Steve, if you heard from you, you would slap you. So just stop. But I notice I see it's 8:01 p.m. and you need to get yourself out of here and go spend time with that wonderful Viking warrior princess.
No, I'm just going to go and get a little nap before I have to go and play amateur Uber driver.
Okay.
Now, I'm not kidding. I don't know how long I can do this. We're 3 weeks now, and
wouldn't you love to see, like, all of our betters love to live the life of us working class folk and just watch them melt away at how tough it is to be us?
Oh, Donald Trump would be in a weeping heap.
He'd be on the corner with dark sunglasses selling pencils.
I mean, not to jump up on the cross or anything, but like I was saying a few weeks ago, I've gotten to the point where I do value the weekends because it's a chance to and get ready to face the coming week. Well, that hasn't happened for a while now, because I spend every weekend focused on what time do I have to take, what time do I have to drive, go get.
You know what that tells me?
What?
That tells me I need to get you 2 jars of bacon relish.
Ooh.
Well, there was 2 different types. I'll have to try. It's not easy to get there because it's so freaking far out of the way. And
what I need is what Jimmy Buffett once referred to as, "Can I get an amen for a $50 pickup truck?" I got to figure out a way to put him in an apartment over there and get him some kind of wheels. And because, you know, the reason I have to do all this is because, A, no license, and B, I have an agreement with my insurance carrier that he will never, ever, 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 ever be on my policy of insurance again, unless I'm willing to pay like a $1,200 a month premium. Yep. So.
Well, my good man.
You have yourself a good evening, Steve, and go in. I hope you get to go and enjoy your Cincinnati chili. I've got somebody on the stress line over here, and I don't have to leave till like 11 or so. So I'm going to go overtime a little bit and take a few minutes for that call too.
Take care of yourself. You hear me, brother?
I hear you. Thank you, Steve.
Take care.
Bye bye. And so over to the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Am I on?
You're on.
Oh, it's JR in Columbus.
I'm glad to hear from you.
How are you, sir?
You tired?
Yeah, I could imagine. I would not want that chore.
I got home at exactly 1 o'clock this morning. Managed to force myself to sleep by 1:30. Woke up at 6:50 because that's still my, you know. And then spent the rest of the day trying to catnap here and there so that I'd be something resembling coherent by airtime.
Well, you've been extremely coherent tonight. At least the part I thought I missed the first hour, because I've gone back to my job this week. And not to get into specifics, I think you know what I do, but I'm in a public service job, and we all went back to work this week. So there's a big thing there, right there, what I do. And it's been a shit show. To say the least.
I can imagine.
I'm glad that everyone's staying home for the most part. I had actually been going to the building because I've been so COVID insane, staying in my fabulous little apartment here in Columbus that I'm just like, you know what? They said we go to buildings and work if we want to, I'm there. So I guess Gets me out, gives me construction, gets me to the team, which I haven't had much of in the last 6 months, like most of us. And I'm gearing up to do whatever we can to get Don Gatti out of the Godfather position at the Playhouse. So I've actually got 2 texts today for the Ohio Dem. I've already signed up to volunteer for the NAACP, get out for both efforts. And we got to get this motherfucker out. I mean, every day it's just a new outrage. I'm tired. And I'm just a few years older than you, but, it gets the wears on you physically after a while. And I started getting high blood pressure for the first time in my life, even though I'm a lifelong smoker. I never got high blood pressure for the last 18 months or so. There's been a lot of other stuff going on in my life as well.
You're a little bit muffled. If you can adjust however it is you're addressing the mic, it would be helpful.
Phone's probably running out of juice. Let me plug it in here. I'm right here by a plug, but I'll try to enunciate a little more as well. Can you hear me all right?
Hold on. You're much better. You're much better there.
In.
You're much better.
Oh, okay. Well, plug it in because I know it's running out of juice. But, it's been the last 15 months have been, I call this year the demon bitch from hell. I also want to ask you, and I know I've asked you before and you've not responded, and I hope I'm not touching something sensitive, but I had been wondering about Tim, from West Virginia, the guy that called in quite often. I know he was seriously ill. I have not heard anything of him lately, and, I don't know if you have, but I hope he's doing all right.
I hope he is too. But he became very, very hateful and abusive, and I frankly don't need that in my life. And I severed contact.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to hear that. That could be partially due to his illness as well, but at the same time, I understand where you're coming from because I've had to black off my brother and my old man. I can't deal with their compass shit anymore. My brother's calling me a reverse racist, whatever the fuck that is. And my dad's calling me an asshole because I was put on. My brother came up here from Texas to go on his annual, hey, I'm back, let's party tour. And I told him he shouldn't come. And he came anyway. He's coming from Dallas, Fort Worth, which is like the hot spot in Texas. And Texas itself is, as you say, burning up with corona. And can you hear me all right, by the way?
Yeah, you're good.
Okay, because I plugged in. I told him that he shouldn't be coming up here. You know, Ohio's bad. We're in another spike. And he shouldn't be coming up. Well, you know. He did anyway because that's them. And then afterwards, he didn't bother to come see me. And I told him, I said, you're going to come over here. It's going to be in the parking lot because you're not coming to my house. And anyway, I haven't even been out to my mother's house since probably March, and I definitely haven't gone into the house. Even then, I was in the yard the whole time. I've been trying to be very careful with this, because I take it seriously. I've only lived through one plague in the epicenter, New York City, AIDS, 1980s, and I've never been through all this. And I don't play with this kind of stuff. And AIDS is a hell of a lot harder to catch than this is. So, but I've been assaulted by people over masks, cussed out. Yeah, I mean, people in Ohio are, I mean, not in Columbus, fortunately. Most people are cool. Columbus is a very cool, progressive city, thankfully still. But all around us is the crazy motherfuckers who love Trump. And they're just, you know, there he is. But, I don't know. I just felt like calling tonight. I want to try to mix it up a little bit. I get occasionally, shall we say, not tired, but, you know, some of the same people all the time. It gets a little old for me, but when I'm given on me,
night. No, I'm glad you jumped in. Feel free anytime.
But, at any rate, Columbus is still pretty much shut down, and, I stay home all the time, and, but I will go out and knock on a few doors here in the next few weeks if necessary. Even though I said I was going to sit it out this time, but I can't sit it out this time. I think we need all hands on deck because we are entering a very scary period, and it's getting scarier by the day. And, you know, doing what I do, what I really worry about the most is kids. You know, and I haven't even seen them. All the things that they have to do during the summer were taken away from them. And I'm blaming motherfucking COVID Caligula. He's taken so much from us. Why anyone would want to give him another 4 years is beyond my fucking comprehension. So I know it's sort of stop time for you to sign off, but yeah, I'm glad I got to say a few words.
And hopefully in the future you will say more than a few.
Yeah, I don't want to keep you bopping. Now you need to take a nap. I mean, you got your shift, and that can't be fun. I've got in trouble with tracking violations and whatnot, and I had to have BP take me around, and I always felt bad about it. And so I understand that, and I always felt bad for the people that carted me around. So thanks for carting your son around. Although I worry about him at that job. So.
Oh, it scares the daylights out of me.
Oh, hell yeah. It would scare me, too. Every day after he's been there all night, he jumps into your car with you. And I don't know.
Believe you me, we drive all the way home with the windows open.
But anyway, I wish you and your family the best, and I will try to check in soon. And next time you talk to Steve, I want you to see that he had mentioned to me he has relatives in Urbana or something. I don't know, but I don't crow that I'm born and raised, but actually it was a different town when I lived there. Now it's full of Trump and Easters, and now I when I go over there, I keep a real low profile. Real low. So anyway, but that's where Jim Shorts is from. That's where that alleged guy that you know, won't wear a mask. He's a Ohio rep, actually. And he's a person of color. I think he's of Spanish origin. It surprises me that the people in that area actually vote him in. But he's drank the Trump Kool-Aid, so they're cool with that. But, yeah, he's the one that won't wear a mask because his face is in the image of God. And this fellow would be...
No, that guy, yeah.
Yeah, he's from Urbana too. Okay, so we got the double shot of craziness.
Well, apparently it's Urbana. Apparently it's in the water.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I've also said all along that one of the reasons why this country's going crazy, and I believe it's been documented as far as the Romans empire falling as well, was lead in the water supply.
And well, the plumbing pipes were lead. If you ever go to Pompeii. You can see the lead plumbing pipes sticking out of the walls.
Yeah, and I heard that that was one of the reasons the empire fell apart. I mean, people were half insane just in their normal day-to-day lives because of drinking the water. And you heard a lot about that around the time of the water crisis, which you don't hear about, and I'm sure it's still happening, because just like you don't hear about Beirut anymore, I'm sure people are still, you know, pulling pieces of glass out of their bodies, but that's our news media. But, you know, at that time, there were lots of stories coming out about lead in our water supply. Well, now that Trump's like, and I heard a story today that he is just going full breakneck speed to dismantle any environmental regulations he can before he gets out of office. I think the Green Report had a story about, you know, it's like full speed ahead. We're going to, you know, destroy the environment. We're going to destroy everything we can if we have to leave, if, just in case we have to leave. And, yeah, it's just a vile, devious stuff. My blood pressure goes up when I start talking about this stuff, bitch.
Yeah, I understand.
So anyway, I'm going to let you go. Thanks for letting me vent. I try not to as much. I'm really trying to adopt a little more mindfulness in my life and balance and stuff like that. Because, well, I will tell you that one reason I kind of stepped away from Facebook the last couple of weeks, you may notice I haven't been on there much.
Right.
I put some comments on the local news channel, Channel 10, a CBS affiliate. On their Facebook page, some their comments are just horrible. I mean, it's all full of something. And if you're
it's a sewer.
I was getting so many nasty, insane remarks, my comments. And I actually got a PM from some one of them. And I was like, you know what? The next step is finding out where I live. And, you know, and that's how far I think some of these people are willing to go. So I just decided I'm not going to comment on these news lines anymore. Because, you know, people can find out a lot about...
You know, what purpose does it serve? You know, right? You know, what purpose does it serve?
Well, it does. It just gets my blood pressure up, because you can't tell these people anything. You just can't. And we've said it for years now, that they don't believe the truth. They don't believe in rational thinking. They don't believe in critical thinking, common sense. You know, they're just, you know, this is their time. They wanted to be marauders and predators and crazy people. And that this is their time. But I fully expect, a lot of trouble in the next few weeks. And like I said, I worry about the kids. I'm not worried about the adults. Adults are able to think rationally. They'll get through it. But the kids, it's going to scar them. Because this shit's already scarring these kids. And it's just pathetic. And I'll be lucky, frankly, if I have a job next year, because Ohio's revenues are going about 50% short of what they did the year before. So it's going to, and with all that, too, it's going to be ugly. So... at any rate, on that optimistic note, because I am not there.
On that little ray of sunshine, yeah, exactly.
I'm not the ray of sunshine like that in San Diego, but no, I'm a realist. And, you know, if that means negativity and pessimism, so be it. I've been around for 50 years. I've earned it. I've been around the block a few times. I've seen things. I'm not stupid, and I know how to think critically and rationally, so... with that, I will let you go, sir.
All right. You have yourself a good evening, and we'll talk soon, okay?
Best to you and yours.
Thank you. You stay safe, you hear? All right.
Oh,
bye.
I will.
Bye now.
Believe me. Watch out. Take care.
Later. And so we come to the end of this Thorn in the Side Thursday. Tomorrow, when we begin Friday on the Front Porch, we will be at $420 to go to finish the week. Thanks to everybody who helped us get it down this evening. We're only $20 away from done with Wednesday, so awesome. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air with your kind contributions. Thank you so much. Thank you for participating in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you. To our news ninjas, thank you. Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Remember, HeadOn.live will have brand new Malloy coming up in about 40 minutes, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. The Horn is the best place to listen to the Mike Malloy program. And if you'd like, gather together in the Horn chat room around and put the flint to a little truth seeker, little truth seeker campfire. Thanks to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Stay home if you can. It's obvious that we're being lied to about the gravity of this dondemic. If you have to go out, please wear your mask, gloves if you can get them. Take hand sanitizer with you. Maintain your social distance. And pay close attention for anyone coming into your sphere. Remember, Paul from Parts Unknown advised not 6 feet, but 10 feet distance. And if somebody comes burbling at you, hollering about how that wasn't even a peer-reviewed study, we didn't cause no 250,000 infections in South Dakota, avoid that person like the plague, because she is. Later.